We're going to call this meeting to order. And good morning and welcome to our Dallas City Council meeting. At this time, we're going to ask Reverend Dr. Robert Shelton of First Presbyterian Church of Dallas. I'd like to say good morning and welcome to our City Council meeting. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Robert Shelton with First Presbyterian Church. Thank you, Reverend Shelton. And if you would, lead us in the right direction.
Thank you. Let us pray. Gracious and loving God, we offer our thanks to you this day for your promises to guide us and support us in all our endeavors, which make life more meaningful and joyous for all people. Especially do we give you thanks this day for those meeting here who are committed to enriching life for all individuals who make up this great city in which we live. Grant unto each one gathered here to lead our city a special quantity of wisdom and compassion, understanding, and vision. May their deliberations together reflect open minds and sensitivity to the needs of those in this city, which is so filled with opportunities and needs. Grant to these leaders assembled here genuine hope and determination to work together for the benefit of all. Deliver them from apathy and pettiness and trivial selfish concerns. Grant that their actions will reflect large and grand hopes, and may they experience in their serving the joy of helping others. To you who are a caring and gracious God, I hopefully offer this prayer. Amen.
Thank you. Josh, little Josh, would you come forward? Mr. Matinsky, would you join Josh out in the center out here, please? Josh is a very special young man. And right there, Josh, Mr. Matinsky is going to join you. Mr. Matinsky, would you and Josh kindly lead us in our Pledge of Allegiance?
Josh, take over my job, folks.
All right. All right, Josh.
You know the Pledge of Allegiance, Josh? He's been trying to sing along. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now, you guys stay out there, Mr. Matinsky. You and Josh, y'all stay out there. Thank you, Council. Let me, y'all go up to that podium.
Let me just say and start off by saying,
Josh is a little friend of ours, and Josh has autism. And the blue light bulb, councilman, council people, that you have on your desk, it is because it is in recognition of Autism Awareness Month. And what we've done and what we're doing, we're asking and encouraging everyone in the city of Dallas, all the businesses, everyone with your front porch, in recognition, take a blue light bulb this month and put on in recognition for autism. If you notice, across the street where the fantastic herd of cattle are, if you pass through at night, we celebrate it by turning those blue in recognition of that. let me just do this. If, Mr. Matinsky, if you would, if you come and would read this proclamation as relates to autism and our recognition of autism. We have our little badges that we're going to put on as well in just a few moments.
You didn't get me the big print copy here, did you?
No.
All right. Well, this is a proclamation on behalf of the City of Dallas declaring World Autism Awareness Day today. Whereas autism spectrum of disorders can affect anyone and does not discriminate against anyone's race, religion, socioeconomic status, or geographical location. And there's a lot of paragraphs here, but the bottom line is that whereas on December 18, 2007, the United Nations General Assembly accepted a resolution for World Autism Awareness Day, and we right here in Dallas, Texas, are following up on that and make sure that there is a great awareness of this illness and striving for a cure. And I'll let Mr. Caraway read the official signing part of it.
All right. Therefore, I, Dwayne Caraway, Mayor of the City of Dallas, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby declare April 2nd and the month of April as World Autism Awareness Day in Dallas, Texas, and encourage Dallas residents and businesses to observe by illuminating their homes and places of residence and businesses in blue. Congratulations to you. Josh, thank you for participating. That goes for you. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, okay? Really, we appreciate it. Okay. All right, Josh. You want to say something, Josh? You want to tell us something? Come on, man. You talk. Come on, man. All right, you want to take a picture, man. Everybody get your light blue and blue. We're going to be strolling through the city. You want to say something, Josh?
Pretty happy, and I'm glad you're all here for me, and just took over, Josh.
All right. Hey, thank you, man. All right, get a pass. Hey, thank you, fella. We appreciate you all. Thank you all so much for what you do, okay? All right. We got some Wildcats in here. We're going to be talking about in just a few moments. But before we do that, let me once again, Mr. Tempe, if you would, before we get into the other part of the program, there was a situation over in Japan that was very devastating, and it happened in Sendai. And Sendai is our sister city here in Dallas. And if you would, I did send a letter there, but Mr. Natinsky, if you would come once again, and we have some special folks that we want to recognize as relates to Sendai, Japan, and the tragedy that they had there. And I'll let you go from here.
Well, why don't we get, let's see, where's David? David and Beth, why don't you all come on up here? You know, when we got the news of the tragedy of both the earthquake and tsunami in Sendai, especially right here in Dallas, it was a very, very tragic event, but even more so since Sendai, Japan is the sister city to Dallas, Texas. And so we've got a lot of close ties and a lot of emotional ties between the two cities. We've had the opportunity, Ms. Pedrano has been there, been over there, as several others have, and we've had an exchange of visitors from Sendai here over the years. So when something like that happens to a community that you've got those close ties to, it really does hit your heart. Today we've got David is here on behalf of the Japan American Society in Dallas, Texas, and he's going to say a few words to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Caraway and council members. In 1997, the mayors of Dallas and Sendai, Japan signed an International Friendship City Agreement that pledged the cities to encourage cultural understanding, educational exchange, and economic cooperation. Since then, hundreds of individuals have been involved in official and grassroots exchanges between the two cities. Sendai, a city of over 1 million people in northern Japan, was the nearest major city to the epicenter of the 9.0 earthquake and tsunami that struck the country March 11. Communities on the east coast of Sendai were destroyed or washed away. Sendai Port and Sendai Airport sustained damage that will take months to repair. The Japan-America Society of Dallas-Fort Worth, in coordination with Dallas Office of Protocol, manages the Dallas-Sendai relationship. In the aftermath of the disaster, we took a leadership role in reestablishing contact with Sendai City Hall, took 4 days, and informing Dallas and the North Texas community about the crisis and what can be done to help. On March 14, the Japan-America Society established the Sendai Relief Fund with the specific purpose of helping relief efforts in the city of Sendai. To date, the fund has raised more than $75,000 in donations and pledges from individuals and organizations. In addition, Dallas companies have contributed millions of dollars to the relief effort through the American Red Cross and other charities. Japan is still in the process of assessing damage caused by the disaster. Confirmed deaths stand at over 12,000. More than 16,000 people are still missing. 170,000 people more than live in Richardson, Texas, are living in shelters. Thousands more are living in cars or have returned to their homes despite having no utilities. It is still winter in northern Japan, with temperatures regularly in the low to mid-30s. Much needs to be done, and the recovery process will be long. Wreckage needs to be removed, infrastructure rebuilt, and businesses reconstructed. Families and lives need to be put back together. The Japan American Society is committed to sustaining and strengthening our long-term relationship with Sendai. We look forward to working with the mayor and the city council to support our international friendship city through this difficult time. Thank you for this opportunity to speak and to recognize our relationship with Sendai.
Thanks a lot for those comments, David. And I know that many organizations around the city, in fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, even on the City Hall website, we've got a link to the Japan American Society Fund. So anybody out there in listening land or anybody here can easily help our friends and our neighbors in Sendai as they work through this terrible, terrible tragedy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
okay. Ms. Hasso, you're next.
Thank you, Mayor Caraway. This morning, I am here to recognize a very special person in District 1 and Bishop Arch District in the Tyler Davis area, and I'd like Michael Amanet to come on up to the podium. Michael Amanet has been the president of the Old Oak Cliff Conservation League for many years, and today we are recognizing him for giving the award that selected North Oak Cliff as the best place in Texas to buy an old house. And Michael turned in a great presentation, and you're looking at the pictures now. These are all photographs of houses in District 1 and maybe some in District 3, I don't know. but we have been selected as the best place to buy an old house. So for that reason, Michael is here, and as you're looking at the pictures, I'm going to read what it says on his recognition. Michael Amanet is a lifetime resident of Oak Cliff, born at Methodist Hospital, and a graduate of Kimball High School. Michael's great-grandparents moved to Oak Cliff in the early 1900s, and he currently lives in a home built by his grandfather, who was a carpenter by trade. And I do want to say Michael's mom is here, if you'll raise your hand, or come on up if you'd like. One of Michael's pride and joy is a 1920s commercial building that he purchased in 2006 and restored back to service. The building, located in a conservation district, proudly is part of the National Registry. For the past 7 years, Michael has served on the board of the Old Oak Cliff Conservation League, a nonprofit organization dedicated to preserving and enhancing the architectural, historic, and cultural heritage of Old Oak Cliff. Under Michael's leadership as president of the league, revenues for the annual fall home tour were increased by 100%. Michael remains dedicated to the preservation of neighborhoods and promoting Oak Cliff as an exceptional place to live. Now, therefore, Dwayne Caraway, the Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, I hereby extend special recognition on April 6th to Michael Amanet for his passionate and tireless efforts in the preservation of our neighborhood. Thank you, Michael.
Madam Mayor?
I just so appreciative to Councilwoman Hasso for giving me this, and I'm usually down here being annoying, and so this is really nice that I get to do this, and I've never been president of anything before, and I probably would never be so again, but I'm very passionate about Oak Cliff, and I love the organization, and I love what I do, so thank you guys very, very much.
Thank you. Madam Mayor, could I say, wait, stay up there. I'd like to say something, Mr. Mayor. Michael is wonderful in what he does for historic preservation, but his work in Oak Cliff, as Ms. Hasso knows, goes far beyond that. He is an incredible cheerleader for Oak Cliff, and I just want to congratulate you on this well-deserved recognition. Thank you.
Michael, congratulations. You may live in, this mic is loud. You may live in District 1, but you really live in Oak Cliff as a total. So congratulations. Thank you, Michael, for your leadership.
Now, before we get started here with all of the excitement, Dallas is a championship city, and we have a lot of championship teams that are with us. And this next presentation, we're going to bring up the number one cheerleader for the Woodrow Wilson Wildcats. And I want the Woodrow Wilson Wildcats to know that this is your number one cheerleader that's going to bestow special recognition for your outstanding efforts. Councilwoman Angela Hunt, Woodrow Wilson Wildcat cheerleader. All right.
Come on up. Let's get our Wildcats to come on up here. Come on up here, Wildcats. Y'all don't be shy. While they're coming up here, I want to say a few words about Woodrow Wilson High School. And we have our principal here as well, Dr. Ruth Vail. You know, Woodrow is an exceptional high school. They were just honored with the International Baccalaureate Program, which is an incredible prestigious honor. Now they have a very, very rigorous course study and great opportunities for their students through this program. It's just incredible. And while they're coming up here, I'm also going to give a plug. We have, of course, their award-winning musical program. Greece is coming up April 14th through 17th. Get your tickets now while they're still available. But I want to talk today about this incredible basketball team. We have international champions with us today. And this basketball team went up to Canada and brought back this trophy right here.
Yeah. All right.
And I want to say, let me ask who the seniors are here. Could our seniors step forward? Okay, we've got terrific seniors here. And I'll tell you, I believe our seniors are all receiving scholarship offers from Division I schools. That's what I understand. Is that right? I want to say that one more time. All of our seniors here are receiving scholarship offers from Division I schools.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Okay, and who is Mr. Trey Davis? Trey, will you step up? Step even farther. We're going to end up over here in a second. In one of the home season games, point guard Trey Davis scored how many points? 50.
Whoa.
50 points. Okay, where's Chuka?
Chuka.
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 Don't be shy. Okay, you come on up. Okay, Chuka, and you can see Jeannie. Jeannie's the proud mother of Chuka here. Jeannie's standing here taking pictures. And that is one claim to fame for Chuka, but his other claim to fame is he's a top honor student and he will graduate with high honors.
Hello.
You guys are just incredible and we are so, so proud of you. I want to read the special recognition, then I'm going to ask your coach to come up here. Special recognition from the City of Dallas. Whereas, each year, one of the largest sporting events that feature high school basketball teams from around the world is held in Edmonton, Canada. And whereas, the REB Invitational Basketball Tournament is celebrating their 29th anniversary. And whereas this year the Woodrow Wilson Running Wildcats men's varsity basketball team was the only team in the United States invited. And whereas those on the varsity team that competed were Chuka Ine, Curtis Davis, Mark Brown, Desmond Brown, Justin Daniel, Darius Wright, Michael Vickers, Devin Williams, and Dima Sane. And whereas the varsity team coaches and team managers were Mr. Patrick Washington, head coach, right beside me here, Mr. Wendell Thornton, assistant coach, Ms. Stephanie Alvarez, and Ms. Valerie Rivera, team managers. And whereas Woodrow Wilson, Running Wildcats men varsity basketball team, say that five times fast, won the tournament and brought home the championship trophy to Dallas. Now, therefore, I, Dwayne Caraway, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby extend special recognition on Wednesday, April 6, 2011, to Woodrow Wilson, Running Wildcats, men's varsity basketball team, and I further call upon the residents of the City of Dallas to join me in enthusiastically congratulating this team and their accomplishments. Great. Now, the other cheerleader for the Woodrow Wildcats is, of course, Mr. Sheffy Cadane, which works tirelessly to help improve the high school. We work together about
it. I am a Wildcat graduate, yeah. Hey, guys, congratulations. And my only sorrow here today is that Councilman Jerry Allen is not here to see what a true Wildcat looks like. See, he's from the Lake Highland Wildcats, and he brags on those Wildcats. Well, I told him we were first, and we're the best. And he knows that. So, guys, we've got to get a tape of this and get it to Jerry Allen. But congratulations, gentlemen, for all you've done and accomplished, and you have made this city proud of you. Thank you so much. And I've got to say something about Principal Dr. Vale. This lady makes it all happen, too. She's one of the best principals in the City of Dallas, and there's no way they're going to take her away from there. So if that ever happens or they try, you let us know, because you're staying with us, unless you move up to the top of the administration area. But we appreciate you so much. You want to say a little bit about your school? Come on, because it's the best.
Well, just a side note, I'm also a proud Wildcat, so I did graduate from Woodrow Wilson. So I'm very happy. You know, I came back to come and help the students in Dallas as a teacher and an administrator, and ended up back where I started. So I was very proud of that accomplishment, and this is my 20th year reunion, so I'm starting to feel it now. But it's a full circle, and what our community really beliefs in helping our students, and through that, you know, we have partnered with the city as well for our fields across the street. So we are revitalizing the area, and we will continue to do that. And of course, I'm proud of every accomplishment that our students have accomplished this year. I mean, it's amazing, and basketball, swimming, every sport, soccer, it has been amazing. So we love to help our kids, Woodrow Wilson. So thank you.
And Coach Washington has been coaching for, I think it's 11 years now.
11 years.
All great years.
Yeah, all great,
all great years. Please come on up here and have a few words.
Well, good morning, and I thank you guys for allowing us to grace your presence this morning to the esteemed panel, your honorable Mayor Caraway. Just a couple of things about our basketball program and some of the strides that we've made. The biggest thing that I'm proud of. I mean, I'm proud of the record and everything we did in Canada, but the biggest thing that I'm really proud of is that we have seven seniors, and right now all seven of those seniors are eligible to play as freshmen next year at the NC Division I A level. And our lowest our lowest ACT score is a 17 and our highest is a 21. So even though basketball, even though they, you know, they're good on the court, they're also great in the classroom. So again, thank you all for allowing us to grace your presence. God bless you and go Dallas.
While you're taking a photo, Mr. Atkins.
Again, thank the Woodrow Wilson Wildcat. I wish Jerry Allen was here, really. You know, the show, who really the Wildcat? But Coach Washington, Patrick.
Hello,
Coach Washington. Is Coach Washington? Could you stand in front of the mic over there when you, after you take your picture? Yeah. Yeah. You know, say, Coach Patrick, you know, I just want to ask you one question. How do you recruit a Chucky for Bishopdown High School? But he looked great, you know, Bishop Falcon, so I'm glad, you know, you showed that private school and public school do run together. You know, you take a private school and a public school to make a great student. But again, you know, I just try to find out how you recruited him, but you did a great job. Whatever you did a great job.
Yeah, we have assistant coach Juan Rivas here. Yes. And also, let's see, we have teacher Russell Kellerman taking pictures. And who am I missing here? Coach Thornton. We have Coach Thornton. Anyone else we need to introduce?
Well, my parents, all the parents.
Parents? Y'all wave. Y'all wave. Anybody else? Now, we can go down row by row and introduce everybody. Yeah, we might do that. Listen, guys, congratulations. Go Wildcats.
Mr. Nitinsky.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. You know, a couple of comments. For Jerry Allen and also our previous colleague, Gary Griffith, who both of them bleed WW, you know, everything they buy is emblazoned with Woodrow. We can Photoshop them in later so they're not part of the, they don't miss the festivities. But I think what this proves up is not only can you put together a great team of kids to go out and win a championship like this, but when you talk about the baccalaureate program, the achievements, the scholarship, and the level of education that they're getting at a DISD school, it says a lot. Sometimes DISD takes an unfair level of criticism about what they're not doing for our kids, and I think this proves up that they can do a great job. And sometimes also you talk about people and it's all about sports or it's all about education. This group of young men here proves up that you can do both. You can be great at sports, and you can come out of school with a great education. I wish you all the best of luck. Thank you.
Mr. Cadane has something. He's had a conversation with the coach,
yeah.
And I just kind of overheard it. It's in reference to Jerry Allen.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to let Mr. Nitinsky
coach up. Guess what? Coach said if I'd like to hang on to this for a while and let Mr. Allen see it, make sure he knows it. That's what we're going to do. I get to keep it for a while.
All right. Thank you all, Wildcat. Appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you, Angela.
Mayor, I'd like to say a few words to Dr. Vail. Congratulations. It is always really nice to work with you in Operation Comeback. And thank you for your kind words on Randall Park. I know that the Park Department and the City of Dallas, a great partnership with that. And we've been working really hard with Ms. Hunt and myself on the Santa Fe Trail, and I see sometimes in the morning that the students use that trail to get to school. So, council members, thank you very much for your support on the Santa Fe Trail. Basketball team, congratulations, and as Mr. Natinsky has mentioned, sports is important, but education, that's your future. Ms. Hunt, thank you very much for recognizing the Woodrow Wilson Wildcats.
All right, Woodrow, thank you. All right, at this time, Ms. Hasso, would you kindly join me here at the podium? And this is a celebration this morning before we get into our city business, and this is a part of city business recognizing the efforts of great champions and just how great Dallas is. In Ms. Hasso's district,
that's right,
and also in the city of Dallas,
that's right,
we have this school that is recognized. We're going to get them in as the Wildcats are leaving. Mountain View is getting ready to come in.
The Lions.
The Wildcats are leaving, and the Lions are getting ready to come in.
Come on up, Lions.
We got it. Yeah, but then we're controlling that tangle right now. Yeah, they're eyeing one another. All right. Now let's get the Lions in here.
Come on up.
Come right on in. Come on in, Brother Athletic Director. Y'all can just come right on up. This is Mountain View Junior College, and these are the Mountain View Lions. And let me just tell you this. They, too, represented Dallas, and they, too, won the national championship.
Yes.
Y'all come on in here. How y'all doing?
Doing great.
I attended the pep rally. The Mad Mavericks and everybody was there. The cheerleaders from the Mavericks, they were all at Mountain View. And let me say that when it's about academics, as we just celebrated the last team, these young men, they are all scholars. And as Ms. Hasso will read the proclamation in just a moment, you will find that each and every one of these gentlemen standing before you has maintained and has an average grade point of 3.0. And that is to be commended. You guys have done a tremendous job in representing the city of Dallas and representing Mountain View. Folks didn't understand that you all were going to go up to New York and whoop up on those folks from New York. And y'all whooped up on them representing Dallas. And we certainly appreciate it. Ms. Hasso?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor Caraway. And again, my congratulations to the best junior college in the city of Dallas. Mountain View College is part of the National Junior College Athletic Association, which has a 40-year history, and Mountain View College is a jewel of the Dallas County Community College system. Mountain View College is building a name for itself and creating an athletic program that places a premium on academic achievement. Mountain View College men's basketball team earned admission to play in the National Junior College Athletic Association Division III championship game in New York State in March of 2011. And the Mountain View Lions overcame underdog odds to beat the conference's top-ranked Rochester CTC Yellow Jackets by a score of 72-64 in Loxodrake, New York on March 12th. And in so doing, the Mountain View Lions were named the NJCAA Division III Men's Basketball National Champions. And the men's basketball team is made up of outstanding young men, 89% of whom are freshmen, with an average grade point of 3.0. So therefore, Duane Caraway, the mayor of the city of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, we do hereby extend special recognition to the 2011 Mountain View College men's basketball team and coach Leroy Phillips for overcoming incredible odds to land the college's first national basketball championship, and by their example of athleticism and academic excellence have brought
honor and recognition to their worthy team, their college, and to the city of Dallas. Congratulations.
First of all, we'd like to say thank you very much for inviting us to your council meeting and joining our celebration. It is our first national championship, and we thank the Honorable Mayor for coming over and being the pep to our pep rally. the young men are still talking about how much energy he had, and I said he's a former athlete, y'all, so he knows what he's doing. But we're so glad to be here, and these young men are we were late this morning because some of these young men had class at 8 o'clock, and they strongly believe our philosophy that they should be students first and athletes second. And they bonded together this year, and they helped one another in the classroom, and we have study hall that they help one another with, and they are just a remarkable group of young men, and we are very proud of them. Coach Phillips is going to come up, and he's going to tell you a little bit about some of the accolades some of them have received this year. We have Coach Leroy Phillips, our head coach, Coach Belvis Nolan, Coach Fred Washington, and I'm Reginald Osborne, Athletic Director of Miami College. Thank you once again.
All right, it is an honor to be here this morning. I'd like to tell you a little bit about my team. Starting on the end, that's Jeremiah Ford. He's a freshman. And he'll be back. The guy standing next to him is Marcus Price, who was the MVP, most valuable player at the Nationals. So he received the most valuable player.
He graduated from where?
Roosevelt High School. the young man standing next to him, Simeon Brinkley, he is from Madison. He's a freshman also. And the glue to the team is number 12, who's standing next to him, Jamal Creighton. He's a freshman also. And the young man standing next to him, William Talton, Gary Talton, as he's known, he was player of the year. He was also first team All-District. He was first team All-American. And All-National. He made the All-National team. He's a sophomore. Next young man standing next to him is Stephen Mandigo. He's from Austin, Texas. He's a freshman. And our statistician is next to him is Eric Bishop. The next guy in line is Horace Hicks, better known as Boomer. He's from Fort Worth. Our red shirt here is DeAndre Scott. He's from Grand Prairie. Our manager, student manager, is Charlie Walls, who is coming out for the team next year. Our next guy is holding the trophy. The national trophy is Darnell Taylor from W.T. White. He's a freshman. Another red shirt here is Dwayne Morgan, the second. Then we have Jordan Mason. He's from Austin. And he already introduced the two coaches, Fred Washington. He's also a graduate from Roosevelt. Roosevelt High School. And the first assistant is Belvis Nolan. Thank you.
Thank you all. Okay. We'll get to it. Hey, Coach, thank you all. Hey, congratulations.
Yep. Mr. Cadane.
Hey, Coach.
Yes.
Coach. How many you got coming back?
11.
So we expect this next year?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Oh, all right.
Congratulations, y'all.
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm happy.
The last presentation. This is the best presentation, Mayor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Coach, can I get these killer knights up here? All right. They went down to the state of Texas. Went to Austin. And you're talking about representing the city of Dallas and Oak Cliff, where Kimball Knights did it. Councilman David Newman, is your district, your team,
Coach? All right.
These are the Kimball Knights, located on West Moreland in District 3, and they went down to the state tournament in Austin, Texas, and they whooped up on the team that they played. And they brought the bacon back home to Dallas as the state champions. Let's give a round of applause to our 4A state champions. Mr. Newman, come on. Now, this is just not any school. This is Justin F. Kimball. And you all ought to be commended. They had a long, long parade. I was in that parade. We had a great time when we made it to the school. And we had a super, super celebration. I want to say to you all, keep up the good work. Continue to be champions. Continue to be role models. Your future is just beginning, but certainly we here in the city of Dallas appreciate the way that you went down and represented our city and your school. And now we're going to hear from your council member, Councilman Dave Newman, who is so very proud to have your school in his district. And we're proud that you are in his district and the city of Dallas and the 4A champions of the state of Texas.
Thank you, Mayor. We appreciate it very much. We've had a lot of great presentations this morning. It's fitting that the Knights finish us off, and because you stand tall here, all slick in your uniform. Thank you for your leadership. The mayor and I have this special recognition that we're going to present you this morning, whereas Justin F. Kimball High School in the heart of Oak Cliff has for many years in the state participated in the state, regional, district sports, where Kimball's high school basketball boys team is no stranger to play in state championships, where on March 12th, Kimball Knights faced Lamarck High School in Class 4A championship game in Austin. Whereas only 2 minutes left in the game, the Knights were behind 60-57 and rallied to an incredible victory of 78-64. Kick butt. Kick butt. Absolutely. Well, that doesn't say kick butt on here. We get a lot of... No, it doesn't, Mayor. No, it doesn't. Get your signature. It's just a feeling of kick butt. All right. Whereas in doing so, the mighty Kimball Knights garnered their fourth state championship. I see those trophies in the halls, guys. And it was the team persevered throughout the season to restore Kimball's winning tradition to Oak Cliff and our state. Therefore, I, David A. Newman, and our Mayor, Dwayne Carraway, Mayor of City Dallas, on behalf of the entire City Council, congratulate the 2011 Justin F. Kimball High School boys basketball team and Coach Royce Johnson. Congratulations. Thank you.
First of all, I'll give it honor to God, Mayor Carraway, all the fine distinguished councilmen that's on the panel, everyone that's in there, our police officers, civil servants. Want to give credit where credit is definitely due. I was just the head coach of the basketball team, but the leadership started day one with our fine principal, that's not here today, Mr. Earl Jones. We're administering a part of the tax testing today, and he had to stay back today to take care of the business at hand. The business at hand. And then it just trickled on down to a guy I played for when I was at Kimball High School. Athletic director. This is his first year as the athletic director, but he's been around Kimball in the community and this fine tradition that we started a long time ago. And he just came back and reestablished that we're not gonna let those standards come down a little bit. That's Mr. Carlton Nelson over there to the left. That's our athletic director, head football coach. It's always fine, when you get a chance, the opportunity to be successful at the end of the year. I felt like we had a lot of years of success as far as to the standard that we set at Kimball High School. We just want to maximize the individuals that we have. I thought that we had an opportunity to do that the last several years. Those kids gave everything they got. But this team right here, I felt like it was a special team from day one. And I told these guys, if you just maximize your abilities, do it together, do it the right way, I think that'd be good enough to bring home the bacon this year and bring back that title back to home.
So back where it belongs.
Back where it belongs. And the thing that I was more proud of than just winning the title was the academic excellence that these guys, we didn't have to leave anybody behind. Everybody was able to make the trip. Everybody got a chance to enjoy it. But just the fun of the trip. You can win sometime and you just think back to all the problems and, you're ready for that year. And I wasn't ready for this year to end, because when it ends, you're going to have to take your face off of some of these individuals that you're not going to be around next year. That was the hard part. The good thing was that they left a bond. I told them the day before the game, the night of the game, the one bond that you can keep is if you win this game, that you'll be a team and a family forever. And this plaque, this recognition right here from the city, it just clarifies that whole thing. Regardless what direction these young men go in, they always be bonded as the 2011 state champs. And at this time, I like to recognize those guys and the ones that's not here. I want to start on right here with the coaching staff. Ryan Fape, he was also a member of the 1997 state championship team, and he's my assistant head coach now. Coach Toby Daniels graduated from Kimball in 1995, was a fine baseball player at that time, fine supporter of Kimball basketball. Coach Robert Jacobs, not here today, he's at the school right now. Coach Bo Johnson, Blendon Bo Johnson, a lot of y'all might know him as one of the great track runners back in Dallas history. Next, I want to start off with the players. Go with the players. We have Courtney Boonight Austin, right there. Then we have Austin Franklin, one of our captains. Step out, Austin. Austin made the all-tournament team. He signed on with New Mexico State to play football and basketball. Austin Franklin, he also was first team all district, he's a senior. Nicholas Morrell, another senior. He'll be attending the University of North Texas next fall. Next, we have Ryan Daniels. He's a sophomore. He'll be back next year. Dick Randale Jones, he's another sophomore. He'll be back next year. We have Kelvin Kazee, senior. He's still narrowing his choices down to whether he'll do football or basketball next year when he attends college. We have junior David Tucker, three-point specialist. He'll be returning next year. We got our MVP of the state tournament. Let you know that big things come in little packages. Shannon Lilly, he's a junior. He'll be back next year. We got the point guard, the leader, Oscar Lewis. Oscar Lewis has narrowed his college choices down to three schools right now, and we'll send it back to Mayor Carraway where he'll be going, and we'll let him recognize that in one of the later meetings. I know we looked a little small today. Three of our big guys, Jerrion Henry, Jalen Jones, and Jordan Williams, flew out yesterday to California to play at an All-American game that'll be on tomorrow night. I hate that they got a chance to miss this, but we appreciate the recognition. We humbly appreciate it and we accept it, with open arms.
Thank you.
I mean, this right here is just as big as that state championship trophy because it's coming from Dallas. That's we appreciate awesome. Having y'all.
Thank you.
Having us today.
Come on, Dave. All right, we're going to get ready to take care of a little business.
Thank you very much, Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We begin your morning speakers this morning with Irish Watson, followed by Tony Rios. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Thank you. Thank you. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred for further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timers on both screens. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. Again, we begin with Irish Watson. Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Iris Watson. I reside at 3979 Granite Hill, Dallas, Texas, 75241, precinct, well, this state. Anyway, I'm here today for my business down at 1700 Commerce. I moved into the building I signed my contract September 09. I was excited when I signed my contract, put money together to open up my business. On February, out of all the excitement and joy of having my own business downtown, a salon, I was disappointed. All my excitement and joy was taken away, well, died on February the 19th of this year when I went to my salon and saw that it had been vandalized. Some items were stolen from my salon, and so I started searching and researching information. I actually saw the video camera of some of the stuff that was taken in my room. I saw the video. I'm not blaming the city for what's going on the inside of the building. In the course of my research, I found out that not only had they broken into the building on that day, actually it was my room was entered in with my office was entered into with a key. And during my research, I found out that the building had been getting vandalized for over a year plus some. So what I'm asking is that there are cameras on the outside of the building on 17 on Irving and Commerce. Then you have the cameras on Commerce in Irving and Jackson and Commerce in Irving. Anyway, during the course of my research, Like I said, I'm not going to go into any details because I have spoken to some of the lieutenants and stuff about the camera situation. I'm just here to ask that those cameras are monitored more because if people are breaking into a building and taking items during the daytime, to me, that's dangerous for me and my clients because if they're breaking in the daytime and the items that they're taking are heavy items, and so I know they're not walking down the street with items. So they are parking in those parking lots and going to the parking lot with the items. So I'm just asking the city to make sure that we have officers downtown Dallas and those cameras are being monitored. Like I said, if they're breaking into the buildings during the daytime and stealing items from us, who's to say they wouldn't try to, you know, rob us or our clients or customers that come into that building or in the downtown area? And also, I'm like, if you're trying to get people down, businesses to the downtown area as well as residents, I think security, really pretty much security in Dallas, period, needs to be up. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Watts. I'm going to ask Forrest to get with you, okay? Forrest, if you would get with Ms. Watson, and then Ms. Watson, let's see if we can get some of those addressed, okay? Ryan? Okay, it would be Ryan Evans. Okay, thank you. Matter of fact, there.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We continue now with Tony Rios. Tony Rios is not present. Cindy Scott is the next speaker, and we want to clarify that her address is 9853 Soloria Circle, and she lives in District 3. Thank you. Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
My name is Cindy Scott. I live at 9853 Socorro Circle. I am here because I've been a home buyer since 2008, and I've occupied my home and had many problems with the City Creek property. The number one problem is that there is no wall barrier on the property to separate us completely. Current problems that exist is debris from the creek area, trees falling on my fence and home, including the insects and other rodents are on my property. No matter how much I clean up my property, the creek is depleted my property value and dignity as a homeowner. The people pollute this area really bad with their garbage and junk. Once they recognize people are not looking, the creek is turned into a dump field. The past 4 years, I have had to endure the problem, and I'm asking the city council to agree to take action by providing a wall barrier between our properties. Please keep in mind, in this district, 75249, I am the only property connected with the creek. Here enclosed is pictures, and I am asked for your undivided attention. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Forrest is going to get with you on that. We've had a little conversation about it, okay? Someone will get with you. Madam Secretary.
Your next speaker is Annie Lee Parr.
Thank you. My name is Annie Lee Parr, and first I want to thank the city that has allowed me the opportunity to come to address my problem. And my concern is about the 3030 North Hampton Road. My apartment is next to my home. And I've been living in that house since 1967, but I've had problems with that apartment ever since I've been there. And the problem I've had, the water running on my property, the fence is too high, well, when the wind is blowing, blow trash under there. And when it's not blowing the wind on there, they throw trash over the fence. The rocks are being thrown over there and breaking out. Now I got two windows broken in my right bedroom. Now it's broken. Well, I've called the police out there many, many times. And I hope Spider Smith is in here right now because I've called him out there. And he helped me pick up the rocks all over my place. Now, we've had windows broken out of cars, windows. Never nothing being done about it. So I just don't know what to do. And on January 21st, my husband had passed away. And I was trying to bury my husband. They broke out my window in my front bedroom. Now, what I'm concerned about is them having security over there because they climbed that fence. They do all kinds of things over there in their apartment. And I'm just wondering if there's any way that they put security there. Because I feel like if they had security over there, they would know some of the things that's going on. They broke it out my front neighbor's car windows. Nothing been done about it. Now, my windows broke out right now. I don't have the money to fix it with. So I'm bringing it to the city to see what can they do about it. I went over there and talked to the people over there. They'll tell me, just call the police. So I just quickly went over there. So I started calling the police. And I got things in my hand to show how many times I was calling the police. Right here in my hand, just many, many times. Nothing being done. So that's why I brought it to the city. To see if something can be done about people tearing up people's property. That is my concern. And my councilman was over there yesterday upon councilman. And he told me that he talked to him. But I don't know why they called me yesterday. They won't ever come over there and see what I'm saying when I talk to them. But I'm just waiting to see what y'all do about helping me with my property being destroyed. And I'm 87 years old. I can't go out and pick up rocks all the time and stuff thrown on my property. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carr. And Sergeant Anderson is about to get with you, okay? And thank you too, Mr. Newman. Sergeant Anderson, would you get with Ms. Carr and then give us back a report? Ms. Carr, thank you. Madam Secretary?
Due to some confusion about the council rules and the lineup, the next speaker is Ann Murphy.
Good morning, Ann Murphy, 191T6 Windmill Lane. I wanted to speak to you about digital billboards. We've attended a couple of meetings of the Economic Development Committee recently, and still have many concerns. I'm also affiliated with the North Dallas Neighborhood Alliance, and we, along with Scenic Dallas, are very concerned about the ordinance that's being rushed forward through economic development and trying to be pushed to a vote very quickly. We feel that the ordinance that's being presented might allow clustering of digitals along the 17 expressways that are there that they can be done on. The billboard industry has said repeatedly that that there won't be many of these because of the cost and restrictions, but the ordinance as it is currently crafted would not put any caps on numbers and would allow the billboard companies to remove just a couple of billboard signs on an arterial that are not very important signage in exchange for a very valuable board on the expressways that is going to be flashing three messages rather than the one static message that we're all used to. Values are not considered a part of the equation in the ordinance as it's being presented, and we really feel that the 2-to-1 ratio that's being presented is of no value to the city. We agree with Scenic Dallas that there's a better formula with some kind of value consideration that should be worked in order to have a better exchange and make something a deal for the city, that something that is good. Also, the industry, the way the ordinance is, doesn't allow for any input by our elected officials. They don't have any way in on locations. We think an SUP process would be preferable, and we're concerned that our elected officials, you know, the council is able to address different matters from some of the other panels that come forward, and quality of life issues and public space issues are what come before you guys, and we'd like to see y'all have an opportunity to be good stewards of that and support possibly an SUP process for this. Driver distraction is a major concern on our roadways, and the signs are designed for just that. You may have heard the comment, digitals are just replacing one technology with another. Well, if those digitals are made to distract us more and more, then maybe it's time to say enough. These signs have been called televisions on a stick, and there's a reason. And there's one thing that's missing here. We don't have a remote control as citizens. And these three messages going off as you go up Central Expressway or any of our other expressways are not going to be desirable to the residents. That's a lot more advertising in everybody's face and in our public space that we deserve to have a right to say something about that. We deserve to be supported by the council on the open space issue and the public space on this.
Thank you, Ms. Ann. And we appreciate you being here, and I do understand you were here at 7:30 this morning. We appreciate it. We heard your comments. We'll be discussing this matter further. Madam Secretary?
Your final speaker this morning will be Mata Yemen.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the City Council and ladies and gentlemen of the city here. I'm here to speak on the treatment of prisoners at the county jail. I have heard from people in the past, some I've met in public and some who were fellow employees at the workplace, various stories detailing the bad environment their loved ones faced in prison. I hope that in bringing this subject up, I can help those who may be unable to speak for themselves. And let us remember that our Lord, who suffered and who was condemned at the hands of those from a high court without a cause. For the prisoners, I feel that they should always have a day's labor of work. They need to know how to work the computers due to an increase of its use in our society. There should always be a definite plan for them. Rehabilitate due to their loss of freedom, restore, give them a normal state of mind, for a position in life. The presence of God should be felt throughout the facility and in and around the building itself, His commandments and His son's life when he was in prison. If possible, no work on Saturdays. If possible, church on Sundays, people from different faiths that concerns God only to give service to them. They should give thanks before every meal. For the officers, prisoners should always display good manners and be respectful toward each other. No signs of any sexual harassment or brutality by fellow inmates or officers. I feel that officers should have once a year training who are involved with the prisoners. Thank you for letting me speak.
And thank you so very kindly. Let me just suggest that some suggestions that you may have may need to fall on the ears of the Commissioner's Court beyond the Dallas City Council. So I would just encourage you to take the same message also on Tuesdays to Commissioner's Court, because they are the overseers of the county jail. Okay? Thank you, kindly. Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That did conclude your morning speakers.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Secretary. If I could get approval of our March 2nd minutes. All in favor? Any opposed? Madam Secretary, consideration of board appointments.
Thank you. That's item number 2. You have for your consideration nominees for individual appointment. Nominated into the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board is N. Anna Villarreal, nominated by Councilmember Natinsky. To the Permit and License Appeal Board, Gaynell C. Methodin is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the Senior Affairs Commission, Frida Hudspeth is nominated by Councilmember Margolin. Also for full council appointment, to the Reinvestment Zone 19 Board, Cypress Waters, is Michael P. Buckley, nominated to fill the registered voter position. He's nominated by Councilmember Salazar.
All right, is there a motion? Second? All right, all in favor? Any opposed? So moved. Let me say this is, we're going to move into our regular agenda, and we're going to go with, we do have a luncheon today. I think Mary is at the Naval Press Conference. We're going to do that. We're going to work toward trying to get through as quickly as we can this morning. We have a very long and extensive executive session, so we will work through lunch with executive session, but it's going to be pretty lengthy, So let me say that. And then we'll come back after executive session and we'll take up our after-lunch briefings, especially that with redistricting, possibly with item number D, the 82nd session. But what we'll start with is we'll start with item number C. Paul, if you all would come, I think we've been briefed on this item. Some council members may have questions or concerns, and it could be that we may be prepared. So why don't you start with item number C, Paul, Ticket City Bowl.
There are two items on your agenda today, authorizing a seven-year agreement with Ticket City Bowl Football Star Incorporated for a seven-year agreement and also a $50,000 payment for 4 years. The second item, number six, is the third amendment to the State Fair of Texas contract, which will authorize them to pay the Convention and Visitors Bureau the $50,000 a year for 4 years to assist in payment to the teams for this previous game this year. So we did have a briefing. There were 10 council members present, and certainly be glad to go through any part of the briefing or answer any questions about this, these two items. That the council
anyone have any additional questions, or do we need to go through the full briefing? All right. So if not, thank you, Paul, with that, and that'll conclude. We'll be voting in just a few moments. And we'll do that after we take up item A. Mary?
Our urban forestation item comes up first, and I want to recognize Chris Sweckert. And also,
we want to recognize Amir Omar from Richardson City Council. Councilman Omar, thank you. Councilman Omar has been the driving force behind the Trees of North Texas, the Tree North Texas. So we want to make sure that we recognize you and thank you for your presence here at our meeting today. And thank you for all that you do.
Mayor?
Ms. Allen?
I just also want to add praise to also because obviously Richardson, Texas backs right up to my backyard. And Omar has been, everywhere I go, I see this man. He's out there and he's promoting not only Richardson, obviously, but the whole North Texas area. And what you do for the community, what you do for the kids that are out there and your enthusiasm, you just keep it going big time.
So thank you, Councilman. Thank you, Councilman Allen. Any others? All right. Go.
Good morning. I'm Chris Weckert from the Office of Environmental Quality. I think this is the first time I've had to lower the microphone with all the basketball players here this morning, so it's kind of refreshing. It's an honor for me to be here this morning to present to you the briefing on urban forestation. I'm basically stealing a lot of hard work that several different groups have done in presenting their information to you, so I appreciate the opportunity. I'll be speaking to you about the regional and City of Dallas initiatives that relate to trees. Purpose of this briefing is to introduce you to the Texas Trees Foundation's Tree North Texas Regional Initiative. Also give an overview of the existing City of Dallas initiatives and introduce the roadmap model for urban tree planting and planting. And then finally, we'll ask for your support in a resolution to formally support the Tree North Texas initiative. So what is Tree North Texas? It's planned to be the largest regional tree planting initiative in the country. The goal is to plant 3 million trees over the next 10 years in the region. There's different ways for those trees to get into the ground. Both public and private land will both be counted. There's going to be sponsorships, grant opportunities, corporate sponsorships, et cetera. One of the neat things about this program that hasn't been done before is there's actually going to be a way for citizens, residents, groups to register the trees that they're planting. So on page 4 of the briefing is just a very high-level look at what that database is going to look like. And this is going to give us information that we haven't had the privilege to have before. So who are the partners in Tree North Texas? First and foremost is the Texas Trees Foundation. It's the official nonprofit of the Tree North Texas Initiative. And we are fortunate to be joined this morning by Ms. Jeanette Monier, who is the president and CEO of the Texas Trees Foundation. So thank you very much. What that organization does is they're a resource that the participating cities can use for advice and education on tree initiatives. They're actually going to be the ones that execute the contracted and volunteer plantings. And finally, they'll facilitate the charitable givings and manage the grants that the initiative may receive. To date, up to 70 cities are going to pledge to the Tree North Texas Initiative. You'll see on page 6 that contact has been made with many of the mayors of those 70 cities, and Mr. Omar has been key to doing that, so thank you very much for that. Discussions are ongoing with potential major donors for this initiative. Hopefully there will be an announcement soon regarding that. And they've also been meeting with the North Central Texas Council of Governments to make this a true regional initiative. So what's next is currently the cities are confirming our participation in this initiative. Council consideration is taking place if needed. There's going to be a kickoff event later this month where there's going to be a pledge signing ceremony by the mayors of the participating cities. And finally, the initiative is establishing a centralized website. If we pull this off, again, this is going to be the largest regional tree planting initiative in the country. And, you know, as the director of the Office of Environmental Quality, one of the things that really excites me about it is it's going to be a major step towards our attainment of the air quality standards that's being set for us. Trees have many benefits, which we'll get into here in just a moment, but one of those is certainly the reduction of pollution. So shifting gears a little bit and talking about what's going on in Dallas. You know, not many people think of Dallas as being a tree city. But I can tell you from my experience and the Green Dallas initiatives that we have, there is a growing interest out there in not only becoming a green city, especially on trees, and growing our urban forests. In fact, as part of our comprehensive plan, Forward Dallas, one of the key goals of that plan is Goal 6.2, which is to preserve and increase our tree canopy. So yes, in fact, Dallas has received the Tree City USA designation from the Arbor Day Foundation for 6 years now. That's something the city is very proud of. I mentioned that the City of Dallas has several ongoing initiatives. I'm going to highlight those in the next few pages. All of these initiatives I'm going to speak about are going to contribute to the Tree North Texas program that we're asking for your support on today. So first up is the Adopt a Medium program, and that is coordinated through our Street Services Department, their Momentum program. And that's where individuals, citizens, homeowners associations can get together and take ownership of our medians. It often involves landscaping and often tree plantings. The Dallas Reforestation Program gives citizens access to trees that the city actually provides. So they contact us, we'd like to plant in public areas, so our parks, our recreation centers, we give them the trees to plant, we work with their organizations to get those into the ground. But it's also a partnership with the ISD for their school properties. What they must do to be able to receive those trees, they have to commit to maintaining those trees. And that program is available through planting season, which is October through March of every year. City of Dallas also has a City Forester program. This is where we train citizens on basic tree skills, how to plant them, how to maintain them. And in return, we get 15 hours at a minimum of their volunteer time per year to help us really be the eyes, ears, and hands of the community to help us in these tree planting initiatives. They do a lot of speaking engagements at schools, at public libraries, garden clubs, etc. And we really appreciate their assistance. Two other initiatives, anytime we do park and recreation construction, golf courses, parks, there's a program in place where we plant trees along with that. We also have civic partnerships. One that's very popular right now is the Dallas Mavericks Trees for Threes program, where they donate a tree that goes into the ground for every three-point shot they make here at home. And luckily they're having a good season, so we're getting a lot of trees out of that. We work with our neighborhoods, partnering with the homeowner groups, and then also in parkways and open spaces, as I mentioned before. Urban Forest Advisory Committee was established by the City Council in 2005. Mr. Bob Curry is the chair of that organization. As you all well know, they assist in developing the best practices that we can look at. How do we conserve trees in the city? How do we add to our tree canopy? They also play a vital role in educating the citizens about the importance of the trees and taking care of them. The Dallas Development Code has very specific requirements around trees. There are tree protection measures. So anytime there's a development project and trees are removed, trees must be added back in the same amount. So the total diameter of those trees, whatever's cut down, they must add back. They can be smaller trees. That means there has to be multiple trees to make up to the same diameter. As an alternative, there are off-site mitigation opportunities if it's not possible to do the on-site. They can do plantings within 1 mile of that property. They can donate to our Park and Recreation Department, and we'll in turn put trees in other areas, or they can contribute to that reforestation fund that I spoke of. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Matt Grubesich, who is from the Texas Trees Foundation, to talk to you about the roadmap model.
Thank you, council members, for this time. You may have remembered me. I was here a couple of years ago, and when I introduced the roadmap to tree planting and planning that we were planning on doing, and I'm happy to say that we have completed that process, and we're actually using that to actually strategically plant trees within the city of Dallas. And each of you have the final report that I encourage you to look through, and if you have any further questions, please let us know. So why 3 million trees? Well, when you have an area that's 375 square miles, you need a lot of trees. What we found out just through the roadmap, there's 1.8 million planting spaces just within the city of Dallas. Most of those, over 50% of those, being on private property. So we can't reach 3 million trees without having a combination of municipalities and the private part of this. We have to get the citizens involved. We have to go out into the public and educate them on why it's important to plant trees, because that's where the majority of our plantings are. I just want to give you some really quick high-level overview of what we got out of the Urban Tree Canopy study that we did for the city of Dallas. And like I said, we had 1.8 million planting locations. We had an overall canopy percentage of just at 30%. And that's pretty high. It's a lot higher than I thought it was going to be. Where we run into problems is most of that canopy percentage is focused in the Trinity River bottoms and the Trinity River area. When you actually start to break that down by council district, when you start to break that down by parcel, it varies from as low as 7% all the way up to 30%. If you go to the next slide, what this process did is what we are able to do with this process now is we're actually able to use trees as civil servants. And we have to start looking at, being with a nonprofit, we have to look at volunteers as our driving force. And that can be trees as well. There are volunteers, there are civil servants that are out there every day working to clean our environment, clean our air, help with water, stormwater runoff. And so what we were able to do is look at Heat Island data that came from the initiative that was done with the Clean Air Initiative from the City of Dallas and from EPA. And we were able now to go in there and strategically plant trees based on Heat Island, based on creeks, based on streamways, based on trails, based on neighborhood districts, based on council districts. And now we're not just planting trees to plant trees, but we're actually planting trees with a purpose and a strategy to it. So what does that mean for us? Well, that means when we're moving forward in the City of Dallas and going through with this resolution to try to plant as many trees as we can over the next 10 years to be part of this Tree North Texas, we need to start strategically looking within the City of Dallas of where we're going to plant these trees, that they're going to do the most good. If you go to the next slide for me, please. And really quick, this is just an overall breakdown by your council districts for what your current tree canopy cover is and how many planting locations you have within that city. And I'd be happy to meet with each one of you to come up with how we can plant trees on private property within your area. We can only plant so many on public areas. There's only so much staff that we have within the Parks Department, only so much maintenance we can do. So we have to rely on the residents. We have to rely on those neighborhoods where we have most of those planting locations and get in there and educate them on the importance of trees and why it's important to plant trees and, most importantly, how to manage them and take care of them. So just a really quick overview of what the roadmap is we've discovered, and just to also let you know we are currently actively working with the Parks Department and the City Forester to use this model, so it is actually being the tool, like I told you it would be, that we're strategically planting trees within the City of Dallas. And if you would like more information, please give us a call, and we can give you a more detailed breakdown of how we're using the roadmap and what the results of it are. Thank you.
So to summarize, you've gotten a small taste of some of the benefits of trees in the city. You know, the cooling and temperature reduction that they provide, not only are they beautiful, but they lower our temperatures. And that means we're using less energy to cool during the summer. It means there's less emissions created as a result of generating power for that cooling. It reduces ozone formation, because on those really hot days, that's when it bakes and we get those high ozone days. It reduces our air pollution just by the fact that it absorbs air pollution. And then, as Matt mentioned, the stormwater runoff is decreased with trees because it drinks that water rather than having to run off into our streams and rivers. The current efforts are highlighted on the bottom of 20 that I've talked about. Again, all of those will contribute to the Tree North Texas initiative. So what we're here to ask for you today is a council resolution in support of Tree North Texas, and that's item number 4 on your voting agenda today. And we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
All right. Thank you for a good presentation there. Ms. Hossel, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, I think this was a great presentation, Chris. I'd like Gilbert Aguilar to come up, please. There were two major efforts in my district on tree plantings in the last 4 months. We planted 160 trees at Lake Cliff Park through the Mavericks Trees for Three. So I'm very, very appreciative of that, and that's a great program, and look forward to having them back in North Oak Cliff. The other tree planting effort that we had was by a group called the Jefferson Median Beautification Project. And how many trees did they end up planting, Gilbert? Do you remember?
I'm not familiar with that particular project myself.
Yes, you are. You help me with it.
Which project is that?
Jefferson Median. Do you remember that?
Yes, I'm familiar with the
okay.
With the
well, they probably they planted somewhere around 60 to 80 trees in the huge median that's on Jefferson Boulevard, which is a major thoroughfare in my district. And again, that was a median program. What I would like to do is to make sure Chris and Gilbert through the medians that we have some clear guidelines for a neighborhood group. These are all volunteers for a neighborhood group to do tree planting. It took them several months to get guidelines through the medians, and I know, Gilbert, you just took up that department. But, Chris, we've got to get a clear way for neighborhood groups to be able to say, I want to plant 30 trees in this median, and we've got to be able to tell them what they need to do up front. My group had a hard time at every juncture with someone saying, no, you can't do this. No, you can't do this because of this. So if we can get those guidelines to them up front, then they don't feel frustrated in just trying to plant trees. So I just want to mention that. I am in support of the resolution. I think, you know, we've got to take it down to the neighborhood level and the street level and make sure that our volunteers feel good about planting trees and they don't feel they're being turned away at every juncture. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hossel. Mr. Allen?
All right. There is I hear a little bit of frustration in your voice. And so, but what I'm going to ask is real quick, just Councilman Omar, if you'd come up here real quick, just real quick. What I want you to do in 90 seconds or less is show some passion here. Give us some passion. Tell us what these other cities have done and what you've done, too. Just 90 seconds or less.
Well, first of all, I appreciate your passion, and you hit it right on the button. This is all about everyone deciding that it's a good idea, and everyone deciding that we all have our own little piece in doing this. It has been a tremendous success in Richardson. People all around Richardson stop me at the grocery store, anywhere I go, asking how they can get trees in their neighborhood. And when that started happening, I realized that I shouldn't keep it all for myself in Richardson, and that it made sense to start talking to other mayors and other cities. And so it's really my pleasure. This is kind of the pinnacle of the effort. We've already got 40 cities, and as I understand it, by regional standards, that's unheard of to have 40 cities agree on anything. And so y'all, I believe, will either be 40 or 41 when y'all decide to pass this resolution. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for your effort. Thank you for what you're doing. Bob, stand up. You know, here we got City of Dallas and Floyd. I mentioned earlier about everywhere I go, I seem to see him, but he spends his time doing things out there other than code and such. So big-time thanks for your leadership and just being out and a great citizen out in the community. And what's so cool about it, he's a wildcat. He lives out in Lake Allen, baby.
Thanks, Bob. Chef, you better move that trophy closer to Jerry. All right, thank you. All right. Thank you, Mr. Allen, and thank both of you for being here and all the good work that you do. Mr. Natinsky, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, you know, Omar, if you had come to us first, we'd be the second city after Richardson to have done this. But, you know, we'll stand with number 40-something, whatever that is. You know, I think we have to be more innovative in how we go out and accomplish a lot of this. Many of you all know in the city we have Father John, who goes out on the weekends and plants trees very lovingly with little plastic protectors around them and everything, and doesn't ask for permission, he asks for forgiveness. And he has beautified many of the streets, everything from Harry Hines to Forest Lane to Beltline Road, through his efforts. And it's somewhat unfortunate that we have to have a situation where a devoted citizen goes out, gets trees, plants them sort of after dark on the weekends to get away with trying to help beautify our city. And I think we need to try to figure out a more customer-friendly way to deal with that. On a more local note, I understand Ms. Hosso's frustration, and I think we need to work on that because there are a lot of pent-up demands on the part of neighborhood associations who are willing to get out with their shovels on the weekends and plant trees. The City of Dallas, the Parks Department has a tree farm. We've got plenty of trees. We just can't get them in the ground fast enough. And the last is from the George Bush Tollway 190 all the way down to Arapahoe. We have just finished a project that the City of Dallas initiated. I found a grant that the Green Ribbon Grant Program with the state of Texas that not only went out and did all the construction work, planted an irrigation system out there, and guaranteed to the city that we would they would maintain that for 2 years. So there's funding available. We need to be more aggressive, Chris, in searching these things out, because if we don't spend the money in this region, I guarantee you it'll be spent somewhere else. And you cannot believe the response. That was, I think, over 200 trees that were planted in just a couple mile segment there. The response from the communities along there, once the trees were in place, was, gee whiz, why'd it take so long to get this done? So on to the next median, and I appreciate it and certainly be supporting this.
Thank you, Ms. Natinsky. Ms. Madrona, please.
Thank you. Councilmember, thank you for being here, and of course, Texas Trees Foundation and Urban Forest Committee, thank you very much. I think in addition to our responsibility and the benefits that we do, we get with planting trees, I think it's important, are we calculating the types of trees, because we have to have the proper mixture and you know, to have a great canopy. How are we coordinating that with the volunteers that are planting the trees?
I know there's not currently a tree inventory taking place, but with the mapping that we're going to be able to do...
Can you come up to the mic,
yeah,
please?
We're going to be driving people to a website, the treenorthtexas.org website, where they're going to be registering their trees. So we're going to be able to register and keep track of not only the species, but the size and the trees that are being planted, and those are the environmental benefits that go along with that. So we'll
sure.
be calculating that as it goes. I'm not one that can answer where you are in terms of where an inventory is taking place within the City of Dallas, though I agree with you that it's a logical next step that you need to figure out what you have before you can properly manage it.
Absolutely.
And another key component of that is the education piece.
Sure.
And as we're doing these education and the communications, we need to make sure we're stressing what are the types of trees that work best here in our climate and in our environment.
And the variety.
Absolutely.
Trees. Okay. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Hosso, you hit it on the head, and that's making sure that the citizens and the homeowners associations know the expectations up front. So the more of an outreach that we can do to make sure that they understand what the rules are, the more participation we may find with this program. So I want to say thank you for a very good presentation, and we'll be taking up this item in just a few more moments, okay? So thank you very much. Ms. Soon, Larry Castro is up here, and a lobbyist from Austin, and we need to, as soon as we can, get him back on a plane so he can get back down to Austin to make sure that he keeps looking after Dallas. So if we could move to item number D, Larry and Ms. Soon, if you all would take that, and we can open up for now.
As Larry comes up, I just want to remind you why, in our mind, Larry's work so critical, particularly this session. The House has passed House Bill 1, which is the budget bill. It's not, you know, it's not in concrete. It's not the last thing that will happen to that. And as it is right now, it has almost a $24 million impact on us, not in the direction that we would prefer. The state of Texas does not give a lot of money to the cities. In other states, that happens. In fact, we're the second lowest in cities are receiving money from states. But that's okay. It's not what we're asking for. What we're asking for is don't balance your budget on us. Balance your budget other ways. And this $24 million is probably just the beginning of challenges for us in this regard. You all have been making the hard decisions for the last 3 years, balancing the budget, making the cuts, making decisions about revenues. And so additional impacts on us are not helpful. We're beginning to see some progress in our area. The sales taxes little bit improved, and I'm feeling a little more optimistic about the property base. And this kind of impact will make this budget year very, very, very difficult when the decisions that you've made the last 3 or 4 years are preparing to be set up for a turnaround in the city. And so we're worried about it. Larry's going to talk with you. Please know there are going to be lots of changes in the next few weeks. We hope the decisions are made fairly soon, because if they're waiting till July to decide what they do and it impacts us, that makes our budget process very difficult. So I just wanted to give you that heads up as we go along. So, Larry.
Thank you, Mayor. Members, good to see you again. Mary's right, but I think the more frightening thing about the next 2 months is not the $24 million potentially that's on the table that will impact its potential for getting worse. My anticipation for delivering this briefing has not been met with much enthusiasm on my part. It's not a lot of good news right now. The House has passed their version of the appropriations bill, House Bill 1. In that, there were several floor fights. The good news is that it did stay where it is, at least with respect to its impact on the city of Dallas. When I said I think there's the potential for getting worse, there was an amendment. One component of the bill takes 24%, about 25% of your mixed beverage tax. It's a straight sweep. You know, it's the worst kind of hurt, so to speak. It's revenue straight out of the city's general revenue. That's about $1.8 million a year. There was an amendment on the House floor proposing to double that, to take it up to 50%. We were successful in getting that pulled down. We did have our own amendment to completely reverse it and restore the funding, which was also pulled down. So they left it the status quo. But I throw that out there as an example of they are still looking for money desperately. What I think in all likelihood will happen politically is that right now the public school system is taking the brunt of the cuts. If they choose to lessen the pain on public schools, they have to find the money somewhere. And there are only so many places that they can find it without raising revenue. Right now, I see no indication that they will look toward new sources of revenue that can be characterized as a tax increase. They're jumping through a lot of hoops to characterize all the new fees and the sweeping of money from localities like Dallas as not tax increases. But that could, of course, end up being the net effect, I think, at least at the local level. So if they don't take a look at some of the items that have been proposed, like removing some of the sales tax exemptions, reforming the corporate franchise tax, so far I don't see momentum for that, then that's where I think the potential gets worse.
Larry, I just wanted to add, if you're talking with some of your folks at the state legislature, or you're talking to some of the colleagues, when we talk about equitable distribution of sales tax, let me give you some examples. Massages are taxed, manicures, facials, and other spa services are not. Laundry washing is taxed, car washing is not taxed. Dishwasher repairs, taxed, auto repairs, not taxed. So what we're talking about is why one business is exempt when a very similar business, carpet cleaning's taxed, house cleaning's not. It really is looking about an equitable distribution of these taxes. And if that were done, that would improve the situation considerably.
Mary's correct, and I think there will be some discussion, some good debate about whether to level the playing field among various entities that are taxed and or not taxed. I just don't see it yet. And the Senate, if the political lay of the land in Austin is that the House passed a much leaner budget
The Senate so far has not shown some enthusiasm to pass a comparable budget. Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst has directed several Senate subcommittees to try to find additional revenue without raising taxes. I think they've looked under just about every rock that there is to look under, but the budget as passed by the House, many are saying was more of a statement. If that budget had actually gone straight to the governor, they're not sure that they had the votes to pass it. It was more of a, we're just going to get it out of here, over to the Senate, and keep the process going. Whether they can finish that by June and not going to special session is a big question right now. There's a lot of doubt that they can do that. On top of that, they have redistricting and several other big issues. So it's very likely that we will be going into the summer. Mayor, members, I have listed in your budget briefing, of course it's tough at this point to know which bills will ultimately make it and which ones will not. The ones listed in the budget impact section, I would, it's always risky to speculate on percentage of passing odds, but I would be surprised if these items on your first page do not pass. They're probably going to pass in some form or another. That includes some taking of your current mixed beverage tax. It's just a matter of how much. The increased traffic fines, that one hits us more than we know. That will pass. Although it's only a state court fee, the way it works is the state gets its money first when a defendant pays. And so if they pay any amount less than what the judge ordered, the state makes sure it gets its cut, whatever's left over then. So for every increase in a state court fee, your revenue goes down. Red light cameras, I will put that one down in the 50-50 mark. It's worth noting that we will be fighting this one every session. There's just a lot of opposition to that system down in Austin. The one we're most worried about this year. Now, the bills range from everything from requiring a referendum before you can continue the operation of red light cameras to completely banning them. The one that probably I'm most concerned about is that right now, under current law, 50% after operating costs, 50% goes to the city, 50% goes to state trauma care centers. The state, as much as they say they don't like the cameras, now like the money, of course. So the proposal that I think we're going to spend the most time on is a proposal that will take all of the city's money and take 100% of the revenue and send it to the state trauma care system. And that way that has no fiscal note to the state. In fact, it's a positive fiscal note, and it leaves you with the cost of running them. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on all these. I know your time is short. There are some key issues. Like Mary said, we do have a total right now of about a $24 million total fiscal impact. About $12 million of that is direct hit, things like the mixed beverage tax. $7.2 million is increased costs. You'll see that on the first page, like your pension, your Texas Fire Commission, increased fees, so to speak, that most all of those can be tied back to the funding of a state agency. In other words, it's a fee imposed, collected at the local level that you will turn around, and then it is appropriated by the state legislature to that respective agency. We saw the first signs of that last session when we had about $100,000 additional fees imposed on your waterside operations to fund the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Members, I'll be happy to answer any question you have as I gloss over this, so I'm not leaving things out intentionally, but I am going to move along. So that's sort of where we are on the budget.
And again, I don't think it gets better. There's been significant lobbying done by the cities on the budget. Even the grants programs, though, things like the arts, the libraries, some of our public safety programs, like Mary said, we get very little money in the form of grants. So that's not the big ticket item, but we did attempt to have amendments on the House floor. They were unsuccessful. The library, I think that one's a $300,000 fiscal hit grant. You know, the legislature did take the amendment to restore it, but they put it in what's called Article 11 of the appropriations bill. That's called the wish list. It's the same as basically not being in there at all. It's sort of the, we'll fund these items if there's money left over, and there won't be any money left over. I will move on from the budget if anybody...
We have a couple of questions. Mr. Newman, then Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Mr. Castro, for your sobering and far from enthusiastic presentation. Share with us what efforts you, the manager, the council, the city is taking to coordinate our advocacy amongst other cities in Texas, because this seems like all that you've presented to us today are going to be hitting municipalities. And second is the issue of our Dallas delegation. So first is, what are we doing as Dallas, as a city, to try to coordinate our advocacy to represent Dallas as it will relate to other municipalities? Go to that one first.
Sure.
Because I think that's got to be one of the things we're going to do. We've got to make sure that the legislature hears from municipalities across Texas, large and small, that what they do in Austin affects the citizens in Dallas.
Absolutely, Councilman. It's a very appropriate question. Mary and I have been looking at not only just the Dallas delegation members, but actually have been reviewing our own council, and will be asking that you get engaged very soon with people that you know best. We have already, the mayor, and it is actually a letter that has received a lot of attention. The mayor signed a fairly strong letter, I might say, in jointly with the mayor of Arlington and the mayor of Fort Worth, that you may have seen, sent to the top three state leaders. That letter is being discussed, and it has been circulated widely. You will see it. We are having it printed statewide in the Texas Municipal League Bulletin, so that will be going to all city officials. I've had discussions with the Texas Municipal League about getting the other cities within their respective regions to send a similar letter with concerns to their respective delegations, so that this is not just a North Texas sort of led effort. This is going to take a statewide effort. We will be asking that you get involved fairly soon. One thing that is, It's a matter of timing. It's very important, Councilman. The reason we have not done that yet is because there was no thought given by anybody down there that this House version of the budget was going to change. It didn't matter what kind of lobbying you put into it. And there was extensive lobbying. This version was a bill to be voted on. It did not change from the day it was introduced. On the House side, it did not change in committee. It did not change on the House floor. This was a done deal to get it to the Senate. This bill will be written in conference committee. They've become much like the federal government is, but they know it, they expect it, and everyone down there knows that the Senate's going to do much the same thing. The Senate version of the bill will look substantially different than the House version, but it's not going to change.
So if we haven't already embraced our fellow municipalities, is there a strategy to do that? Is there a timetable to do that?
That letter had three mayors.
I saw that.
And we are contacting other cities, but please understand that, again, their timing is delayed too.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. They know that it's not time to be very loud at this point in time. And the second thing is, every city has its own set of issues, and what they pursue may depend upon that. And
okay.
And we do not have some of the same problems some of the other large cities do, so everybody has to decide whether they want to get in a group.
Well, I appreciate it, Larry. And you know, in a lot of things, the city of Dallas likes to be the leader. The city of Dallas likes to go it alone because we are a can-do city and that sort of thing. I think clearly in this, we need to be strategic about where we find our alliances with other cities, whether they be small city like Tyler or Lubbock or a large city like San Antonio, Austin, or Fort Worth or Houston. So I understand timing is important. I just think we need to very clearly be strategic in forming those partnerships, because the average citizen's not going to understand it if changes are made in Austin that reflect changes into Dallas, and then we turn around to say, well, that just happened. Well, we got to communicate that.
Well, and I think it's important for all of us, and when I'm talking to people now about the budget, I include this, and I would encourage you to, too, because frankly, where we are in the budget now, you've made the hard decisions the last 3 or 4 years and balanced the budget. You're going to have some hard decisions to make this year, but not near as difficult as if all of this comes rolling down on us.
Last point, and then I'll be done. Thank you, Mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Is I remember reading somewhere that Susan Combs, the comptroller, came out with a list of sales tax exemptions, and it was in
the
big billions, like $30 billion.
$38 billion.
I think that would be valuable to us, Larry or Mary.
We get it
circulated to us so that we see that. Now, I'm not at all advocating to raise taxes or anything like that, but I think we need to look at parity, and we need to look at what is being exempted in the current pool to have a balanced approach. I think it'd be good information for us to share with our citizens as well. Thank you. Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it.
We have that, Councilman. We'll get that to you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Newman. And let me just say that I do have a meeting with Governor Perry. And when I have an opportunity to do so, and it's forthcoming, then issues that we may have when I'm with him one-on-one, and Larry, if there's some other things that I need to be able to say to the governor, then make sure that you all let me know so that we can try to deal with it in the best way that we possibly can. Mr. Allen?
Those are good comments. You used the word, too. The average citizen do not excuse me, understand that in reality is what we're looking at is a tax increase, no question about it. To the citizens, this is where the news media, y'all going to pick this up. That's over a 2 cent tax increase. Over 2 cents. We increased it not quite 5 cents last time. So almost half of what we did last time is what we're looking at just right there. And that's just at the state level. So without question, it is a tax increase, and 2 cents plus on that. Good report, Larry, on this. Thank you for your hard work. I've had an opportunity to work with you on several different issues, and you're a hard-working man down there. Do you see any light at the end of the day for putting any limits on payday lending, or is the lobbyist so strong that they're going to sway the vote?
Councilman Nutt, and thank you for coming down. It's always much appreciated when we have our own elected officials come down. There's a significant difference. I can stand in front of a committee and they have no qualms about dicing me up, but it's I am on the inside. It really is feeling it, I did plan on getting to the non-budget related items. It's got a tough hill to climb. That is a massive political lobby that they have down there. As we've discussed, we might have to look at ways to getting creative beyond a state legislative fix. I don't see that happening this session.
Well, thank you for your hard work.
It has never had the push that it's had this session, especially with Dallas and a lot of members like you becoming personally involved and testifying. And so we had hoped that would be enough to, this issue's been around for a while, at least to get it out of committee, to get a vote on it. But I'm not sure that it will. And if they do, it'll be a watered down version.
Yeah, that battle will rage on. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Allen, Mr. Atkins, and then Mr. Nutt.
Thank you, Larry. Kind of piggybacks on Councilor Dave Newman. We're talking about the $30 million, the $38 million exemption to large corporations. Is there anyone pushing the bill to look at that? If so, what about the timing and the guideline to look at those different exemptions?
You know, there is no bill out of committee. If you get a chance, express your appreciation to Representative Yvonne Davis, who has been very vocal about this. She does have a bill to remove the exemptions. Just recently had a press conference down in Austin. In my opinion, I think for a bill that removes some of the exemptions and levels the playing field in a way that is as unfair right now, as Ms. Sims said, some of them just make no sense. How one entity is exempt and another is not. And, you know, I can get very sarcastic about it. I'll bite my tongue, but, you know, look at the strength of their lobby, and you will see a direct parallel to an exemption in most cases. In my personal opinion, I think it's going to take a bipartisan effort to pass any kind of exemption reform bill on the sales tax. I think you're going to have to see both sides of the aisle probably join hands and work on something like that. And until that happens, it's going to be tough.
And by saying that, and the last question, that when you look at so many corporations that have been exempt for 30 or 40 years, and our job is not here in the United States, not here in Texas, overseas, and they still get credit for non-exemption, you know, have anyone, you know, I know there's whole, quite a bit large corporation, I'm not going to call any names, that who can't afford to pay their fair share of revenue, but the job is not here, the job is going across. Have anyone identified that and spoke out about that, or is it too close to the libraries that we just kind of under the rug?
You know, if you look at the mayor's letter, I think it's possible that you can, and you don't even have to, right now, the big ticket item in the sales tax exemption, of course, food and medicine. No one is proposing that those be taxed, but if you just look at the other non-food, non-medicine areas that are exempted, many, if not most of them, just make no sense relative to our taxation scheme in Texas. And that would go a long way, I think, to closing the budget gap. But not only that, I think then you have an opportunity to lower tax rates, of course, across the board. Of course, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before.
And I guess the last question, you know, there is a revenue source down in Austin, but that revenue source is kind of more political, that it's been there for so long, and we probably might not be able to touch this revenue source right now, but it's a possibility if we keep pecking on the wall, we might be able to get some of the revenue source if you break it down to different categories, as our city manager just said. So we probably need to drill down to which one of those that is less negative to get into.
I think the most lucrative revenue source right now that the state legislature is looking at are cities, schools, and counties. That's the revenue source.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Atkins. Mr. Matinsky, please. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a couple of comments, Larry. The alcohol tax one, that is on mixed beverage tax only.
Yes.
Okay. The HB 216, the boarding house issue, considering that we're getting ready to have a briefing after lunch regarding that issue, can you just very briefly expand a little bit about why the reluctance to allow cities the ability to control essentially what are either for-profit in many cases, or nonprofit businesses in residential neighborhoods?
And I will lead into the general legislative briefing here, Councilman. House Bill 216 from the 2009 session was a bill that allowed cities, although even then somewhat difficultly, the ability to inspect and regulate non-state licensed group homes. We need to get a handle on what percentage of all group homes that is. I think you will be seeing more or hearing more of that today. I went down this session and had one of the most interesting, difficult meetings I've ever had with the state rep office. I approached the office who was key with this legislation last session and asked if they would be amenable to an amendment that would do a couple of things. One would open up city regulation and inspection authority of all group homes, not just those unlicensed by the state. And the second one was a very key federal fix that we need in the bill so that any local regulation won't be shot down. That conversation quickly dissolved. I was told the state will never give any regulatory authority over a state licensed entity, or at least on their watch. I was told that the appropriate remedy would be to join in their efforts to get more appropriations to the State Department of Aging and Disability so that they could hire more state code inspectors. That has about $150 million fiscal note to them. My response was that I would certainly be happy to do that. I would engage in that lobbying effort, but I said, we began that lobbying effort back in 2007, was the first time the state legislature, when they actually had money, to try and increase the funding for state code inspectors to inspect group homes. The legislature did not give one additional penny. The same effort was attempted in 2009, and again this session, and I said, without arguing, and I will engage in that lobbying, let's just assume, for sake of argument, facing a $25 billion state budget deficit, that once again, we will not see one penny this session, just for sake of argument. How long do we have to wait while some of our citizens suffer in these places?
Let me just jump in there a little, because, you know, from my perspective, there's a need for some of these facilities. The problem is that when the citizens in the city call City Hall and have issues with an unsafe, unsanitary, you know, not run well facility in their neighborhood, and to send them to an Austin phone number and say, that's your remedy, doesn't really serve the city well.
It does.
So I know you're dealing with it, and I got two other quick questions. The PID legislation that we've got seems to be moving along.
It is. We've had some issues we're working on. I think we negotiated those out Monday. We had some issues from a Houston senator who didn't like what we were trying to do, mm-hmm. so I think we've come up with some language to fix that.
Okay. And my last question revolves around, well, both the two bills, one of them 1087 on the video fees, I guess I'll call it. On one hand, they want to introduce a bill to allow a cable company to terminate the franchise early, and I believe the state franchise fee is still 5%, so I'm not sure that really affects us all that much. We don't have the ability to control fees or anything right now anyway. So what's the downside of that, really briefly? And then the other is, it looks like maybe a touch of good news in the $4.5 to $5 million that the city may get if they add on a video assessment fee. And then I'm done.
Councilman, this is the session on top of everything else for some big utility issues to go through, electric, gas, and on the video side. On the video side, Dallas is one of the few cities that has time left on your local franchise with your cable company. It expires in 2015. Before you move into what's called the state video franchise, which was passed in 2005. The revenue is about the same, whether you're local franchise or go to the state. It's a 5+1 mechanism. The what you do lose if they get this bill. The two are tied together. Senator Corona has given our commitment that one does not pass without the other. His bill allows those cable companies to exempt opt out and go into the statewide franchise. The reason they want to do that is some things that are in local franchises that are not in the state franchise, like customer service standards and things like that. Okay. But we did get an exemption in the bill for Dallas only that keeps them on the hook for running the INET system that we have here, the traffic control system through 2015. They weren't happy, but they took it. In exchange for being able to opt out, there is a video assessment levy. It will bring in satellite. The reason that's fairly lucrative for Dallas is you have one of the highest penetration rates in the state for satellite. It's about 50%, 50-50 between satellite and cable. Satellite, you get no fee off of. In fact, they got themselves exempted at the federal level from even the local sales tax. That is where the 4.5 to 5 to 5.5 million comes
right
in.
But no one should get excited about anything regarding franchise fees. For instance, the FCC on the federal level has decided that they, as a federal agency, would look at that and possibly for the telecom folks do away with the franchise fee, $30 to $40 million for us. And if that were to happen, certainly the other guys paying franchise fees would say, excuse me, but why do I need to be involved in this too? And that's $100 million of our budget. So anything going on in that side of the business, we need to keep an eye on very, very closely because it has potential for huge impact for us.
Well, in closing, Larry, you know, you do a great job down there, but I think what you need to do as some of these issues raise to a critical level or even before critical, you need to call upon us so we can get in our cars and plane and get down there and shore up whatever arguments need to be made to protect the city's interests. It's really unfair to have unfunded mandates shoved down to a city level because we as a city don't have anywhere else to push them to, and we've got to provide basic services.
I think that will be happening soon, Councilman. It's a matter of when you pull the trigger, and they have so much on their plate, and we have so many issues that on these critical ones, on the unfunded mandates, we want to pull the trigger when that issue is on their plate and in front of them. If you train too early, they'll cut a deal.
I certainly understand that, and colleagues, I'm sure you realize this is the visible issue, list of issues that are down there, and as Larry well knows, and many of us that have been down to Austin lobbying, there are probably dozens, if not hundreds, of little teeny tiny amendments that like to get slipped into legislation that could hurt us seriously that are not even in this PowerPoint. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Zinski. Ms. Hoffo, please.
Thank you, Mayor, and I won't take much of your time, Larry. I want to thank you again for all your work and, you know, make myself available also to you for when that trigger gets pulled. And my question is on the film incentives. We had a great presentation yesterday on all of the economic dollars that come into this city because of the film industry. And it was my understanding that Governor Perry was very much in favor of this, and he was even here as he gave a check to the folks that did Prison Break. So what's your feeling on that?
I think the film incentive portion of the state funding comes out of the governor's enterprise fund. It is a pot of money that he uses for economic development incentive. That has not escaped cuts as well. Governor Perry has shown strong support for the film industry. Of course, the budget right now is out of his hands, so it is going through Senate and House. I think there will be some funding restored, probably in the nature, I'm guessing, between 20 to 35 million statewide for the film incentives. That's my guess, and what I've heard they will put back in. So it's certainly less than what's in there now, but even that. And the governor's enterprise fund becomes a little political in and of itself. There are bills to completely abolish that, which obviously would hurt us when it comes to film incentives. So I don't think you will see those bills passed.
Thank you very much. Again, thank you for your hard work.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you. What do the citizen need to be doing to kind of get involved in ensuring that some things are saved within our in our state.
Councilmember, I think right now, if you look at the House vote, and especially new House members are being driven by what they believe is a loud mandate to, I'm not sure what word, to cut at all costs, I think. I mean, this is not just Texas. But I think what you saw in the House is a result of that. And I think this is where y'all are key, probably more key than you've ever been. It's not just calling legislators, because they're going to be hearing from the same people, that's a great question, that you're going to be talking to in the community. I think it's an education issue about, one, fairness in taxes and how they're levied, and two, that the moving the burden of funding state government to cities, it has long-term effects, bad effects, on the state of Texas. It's not really funding and balancing a budget if what you do is look to your local governments to say, run not only your street and public safety programs, but run our state agencies as well. And I guess the message would be that there is an education, but they need to, the constituents need to let their, you know, House members and senators know that there are a lot of things on the table, options to fund, and it's not an easy job. No one's pretending that it's easy, but there are ways that do it that are less harmful to the long-term health of the state, and there are ways to do it that are beneficial. And just pushing the burden downhill, that's the message I would say, is not the healthy way to do it. And they will support them in making a tough decision with respect to balancing the budget, whether that's through cutting state services or finding additional funds to balance state services. Both of those are tough choices, and it's probably going to take a combination of both, but that constituents will support their legislators when they have to come back home and say, I had to cut this agency significantly, but I also know that we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, and we found some additional revenue. But ask them what they can't support is this sort of easy way out of just pushing it downhill. Like I said, I'm not being evasive on purpose. Mary's going to send out the comptroller's report. There is no proposal on the table, but I would say the overall arching theme is that you would support them making a tough decision, whatever that may be, additional revenue or cuts to state agency, and they will be there to support them. But what you can't deal with is this, I'm going to escape my responsibility and I'm going to impose all of these local fees and cut local services and say that we didn't raise taxes. Okay. Well, if I'd known that, I would have said that. Okay. All right.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Mayor?
Mayor, members, I know this is gone. I'll wrap up quickly. There are a lot of other bills, electric streamlining. We'll send those to you. That's a big, big deal about rate making. There is one bill of note that I don't want to steal the city secretary's thunder. This is a briefing that is deserving of a full hour in and of itself, but I wanted to let you know there's a bill that in my likelihood I would be surprised if it didn't pass. It is being negotiated by the governor's office, the lieutenant governor's office, and the White House. It involving elections. it will move all elections in the state to one uniform election day in November. I think the bill will pass. What that means is this will be your last city council election to ever be held in May. And that if the bill passes, you know, you can't constitutionally shorten a member's term, but that anybody elected, the mayor and city council members in this election, will probably serve 2-year and 6-month terms to the following November. or 4-year and 6-month terms for the mayor.
Hey, explain it one more time. Don't explain it. Explain it. Try it again, man. I think you got everybody's attention.
I knew I could end on something to just put it in.
I think you got a lot of folks' attention. And let's listen up now.
The bill that passed, and this is a federal issue and a state issue.
Okay.
There has been, for some time, efforts to what's called to address voter burnout, to not have so many election dates. And they've been trying to push toward one uniform election date. That date has been, to the best of my understanding, negotiated to be a November election date.
Okay.
For any election, you will have a yearly November election date.
Okay.
And that will preempt council charter, our city charters. It will, you know, anything to the contrary. So, for example, your charter requires May elections every 2 years. You will then have to move your way to a November election day. And the reason I said it, you will serve 2 years and 6 months, or 4 years and 6 months, respectively, is that you can't constitutionally shorten an elected member's term.
Right.
So, but you can what's called hold over. That's the legal term. Hold it over till the next election. So if the bill passes, and I would just say it's favorable that it would pass. There will be a strong objection to the bill, but in the end, the reason I say it may be, it may pass is that we'll have federal preemption of the bill. So this is more of a bill to come into compliance with some federal mandates.
Right.
And so, that being said, if the bill passes, it would become effective September of this year. You will have your elections for your current council, and then 2 years, 6 months, you will have the next round of elections. It's mostly bond people, you know. Bond elections and the people behind them love to pick when they want to hold an election.
All right.
So that's the primary opposition. And then, of course, there's opposition. You will go from being the May top of the ballot to probably on page 14 or 15, you know, on a ballot.
All right. Ms. Madrona.
I'll try that one.
Larry, did other cities have it in November, like Houston? Don't they have their
elections? It's spread across the board. It's all over the map.
So that'd be a mandate in the state of Texas?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, Larry. Thank you. All right, Ms. Davis.
When you said that we might be page 14, so will it include other bill, or will it be include governor race? Will it include?
It would include your presidential and every 4 years, Senate, U.S. Senate, congressional, school board bonds, school board elections, city bonds,
referendum.
I don't like it.
You got to write your governor. Thank you, Ms. Davis. Hey, thank you, Larry.
Thank you,
Get
Mike.
Back to Austin. Thank you for a fantastic job that you do, all right? We appreciate it. Council, Madam Secretary, I think we're going to go to the items individually so we can vote on those prior to recessing and going into executive session. So let's take these items that we have, Ms. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 3 is a resolution designating the absences by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Pauline Medrano, Councilmember Steve Salazar, Councilmember Chanel Atkins, and Councilmember Jerry Allen as being for official city business.
All right, it's been moved to second. All in favor? Any opposed? Madam Secretary?
Item number 4 is authorized Dallas City Council support for the Texas Trees Foundation's Tree North Texas Initiative.
Is there a motion? All in favor? Any opposed? Madam Secretary?
Item number 5 is authorize a 7-year agreement with Football Star, Inc., DBA Ticket City Bowl, a Texas for Nonprofit Corporation, Football Star, for the city to provide the Cotton Bowl Stadium to Football Star to hold a New Year's Day game in the Cotton Bowl Stadium each of January 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, and 2018.
All right. All in favor? Any opposed? Madam Secretary?
Item number 6 is authorize a third amendment to the Fair Park contract hereinafter agreement with the State Fair of Texas for marketing Fair Park.
And move the second. All in favor? Any opposed? All right. Let me say this before I read. Thank you, Ms. Secretary. Before we go into executive session, we have a naval press conference at 12 o'clock. We're going to go into executive session in just a moment here. We'll begin the executive session. We will take a break during the executive session, and we'll go for lunch. I think that's how we're doing it. And then we will resume after the press conference back into executive session. And 5E South. We're going to start it here. Then we're going to break and go to lunch down at 5E South. We may suspend for those that are going out to the press conference, come back in at 5E South, continue, and then after we conclude executive session, we'll return back here. Is that correct? All right. It is now 11:25 a.m., April 6, 2011. The City Council will now go into a closed session under Section 551071 of the State of Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from our and consultants with our city attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda: Association of Taxi Cab Operators versus City of Dallas, USA, Kenneth E. Albert versus City of Dallas, Anthony Arendo versus City of Dallas, David Barber versus City of Dallas, David Martin versus City of Dallas, George Parker versus City of Dallas, Kevin Michael Willis versus City of Dallas, City of Houston versus Stephen Williams, United States of America versus Doug Moore versus City of Dallas, legal issues involving DFW General Counsel position and legal issues involving group housing facilities, regulations, and enforcement. We're now in executive session.
Meeting reconvened at 3:05.
All right. Hold on one second. We're going to pause up for just a few more moments. Hold on. Can we go? Here's Delia. We're all right. Okay. All right. We're going to take up item B with the group home. Ms. Coop has a conflict, and she's not in on this discussion as relates to group housing facilities.
Good afternoon, Council. The purpose of the briefing is just to review the different types of group facilities, review the process that we use to identify them, and give you an update on our current findings. Give you some background. There was a multi-department task force in 2007 that first began to tackle the problem in earnest. There was a number of city departments, all shown on page 3, and of course they were targeting code violations, building and zoning requirements, and identified about 345 properties. They performed enforcement activities, and we've continued monitoring them since the work began in June 2007. Page 4 highlights the final recommendations by the task force to the Quality of Life Committee. And you'll see that the recommendations basically try to strengthen the city's authority and role in permitting, monitoring, inspecting, and taking enforcement actions against group facilities that had violations. On page 9, the city's 2009 legislative agenda took a lot of these recommendations to provide a full array of enforcement tools to the city. But then House Bill 216 adopted in 2009, which allows the city to regulate boarding facilities not licensed by the state, did not fully achieve the city's recommendations. the current, the 2011 legislative agenda does include recommendations to strengthen or clarify House Bill 216. Code compliance has taken responsibility for coordinating the multi-department inspections of group facilities since fiscal year 09-10. For the next few slides, we're actually going to just talk a little bit about the different kinds of group housing facilities and specifically who regulates them. Page 6 just gives you a general definition and a definition, the definition of the families in the city code. There are several different types of group facilities in the city, and we're going to enumerate them in just a second here. Who regulates the group housing facilities? The state's different classifications of group facilities are listed for you on page 7. There's a number of them, and what's important to note is that the state focuses their focus is on operations and health conditions. Typically, these facilities will provide medications that are dispensed by staff and assistance with daily living activities. On page 8, we also indicate where the state will step in and perform inspections, usually after receiving initial inspections, complaints, etc. On page 9, we begin to identify the different types of classifications the city uses for group facilities, and what you'll notice is that they're different. And we want to emphasize on that item A on that first bullet is that the state's classifications for assisted living facilities, a very specific classification in the state's criteria, sometimes, not always, overlaps with the city's handicap group dwelling units. Our city's focus has been on premise, structural, and zoning violations because the state law previously only allowed a more limited regulation before House Bill 216. And the city attorney's office has briefed you on House Bill 216. Page 10 gives you a table that begins to kind of encapsulate the five different types of group facilities that we're focusing on today. To make the table a little easier to understand, the next several slides kind of emphasize the distinctions between them. Page 11 tells you about handicapped group dwelling units. And these are by far the majority of the types of group facilities that we're seeing around the city. You'll see that the occupancy limits say 8 or fewer individuals. It is the equivalent of a single family use, so they can be in residential neighborhoods. So no CO is required, and a specific use permit is only required whenever there's a distance provision is not being met, and that has to be 1,000 feet from another group facility. And of course, the clients must be handicapped or disabled. Pages 12, 13, 14, and 15 highlight the different kinds of facilities, and I know you all have previously read the briefing, so I'm not going to break them down any differently except to distinguish that, again, the handicapped group dwelling facility is the bulk of the facilities that we see. I'll give you those numbers in just a minute. All of these other different kinds of group facilities are not in single-family zoned areas. Talking about a regulation enforcement process, we begin that on page 16. For every group housing facility that we identify, we use a very uniform intake process to make sure we're collecting the right information that we need to be able to continue to effectively monitor them and do the best we can to ensure that there are no violations. These facilities can be very difficult to find, so we use different ways to try to find them. First of all, of course, any facility that we've previously identified, beginning with the task force's work in 2007, we continue to follow up on them to make sure that they are still operating, that they're still in compliance, or if they've ceased operations as a group facility. We also talk with a lot of other area care agencies, hospitals, and the state to gather their list of referrals, where they send people that need group facilities. And then through 311 calls. Sometimes people will call in something they don't even know maybe a group home, and depending on what inspection we conduct for illegal land use or whatever the case may be, a code inspector may identify, or any other city staff may identify, that it's actually operating as a group facility, and then we'll send our team in to make sure that we gather the same information from them. On page 17, we give you a summary of where we stand right now. We've looked at approximately a total of 400 properties throughout last fiscal year to determine whether they were or were not a group facility. Currently, about 278 group facilities have been identified as being in operation, and you'll see that better than 85% of them are handicapped group dwelling units. we want to emphasize that we did see another 11 properties that had previously been shown through our inspections through, since 2007. There were 11 properties that were licensed by the state as assisted living facilities, but they had five or fewer residents, technically not meeting the definition of a group facility for the city. Nevertheless, we continue to monitor them and make sure that they're, whether they're back in operation as a group facility using our classification that they're, and that they're in compliance. Page 18, we talk a bit about our enforcement actions to date, and we found that 48 of those 278 facilities currently have violations. We've issued notices of violations to the various departments to take action on them, and the few that are remaining that we're still working through and expect to complete work like in the next 30 days is any properties where we're still measuring distances. That's a little bit more of a challenging thing to determine what the distances are if there's a violation and then who was there first. Page 19 gives you the map to show you where the different facilities are. And then on page 20, we want to conclude by saying we're going to continue appropriate enforcement action in each of these facilities to address quality of life issues. We're going to continue working as a team with all the various departments that are involved to be sure that we do a comprehensive inspection whenever we identify a new one and make any appropriate referrals, take any appropriate enforcement action. And then the city attorney's office will continue working to develop a registration ordinance for those facilities that we're able to regulate. With that, any questions?
Joey, I'm 19 with the map.
Mm-hmm.
What's your gut feel as to how many of these you've identified versus how many you may not have discovered yet? Because I will tell you, in the last those 6 months, I'm sure there's a dot. Well, in fact, I know there's a dot on the map for every phone call I've received with, you know, a concern, a question, and I don't see enough dots on the map to correlate to the phone calls I've gotten. And in every one of those cases, there was a quote-unquote group home of some sort operating there.
Yeah.
So how do we get a better handle on where they are? And because that's going to be a key as to how we move forward. Do you have a strategy?
As we said, they can be difficult to identify, and that's why we think that continuing the inspections of the ones that have been identified, trying to work with neighborhoods whenever they see what they suspect to be one, we get that information through 311 or through our regular interactions with them in meetings, and then certainly working with the care agencies that make the referrals into these group homes.
The other thing that's difficult, we can't go ask everybody if they're a group home. So that if a neighborhood calls you, get us connected with that address. And the other thing about these homes is they change. They go in and out of business reasonably frequently for a business.
All right, it's my understanding that what I would call a neighborhood retirement community facility, and I just made that up, we're getting a serious number of people who are going in, buying up particularly foreclosed homes, and then bringing in numbers of elderly senior citizens, charging them $4,000 or $5,000 a month to basically live there. That's a group home, right?
The way you described it, it would be, and that's why it's important for us to be able to go in. The way that you just described that one in particular, if they're not disabled, there are very specific, they fall into the other classifications, not a handicapped group dwelling.
Right.
And they wouldn't be in a single family zoned residential area.
They would not?
They would not.
There's a number, right? More than how many?
See how complicated this is?
It is.
But that's why when people think they see one, they need to let us know and let us determine.
Right.
That's the only way to go do this. We've looked and looked. There's no one place or no one thing that they all do that we can go say, okay, we know they're one because they did this, because each one of them works differently.
Right. And then you take, and I'm just to use the senior example. So from reports I've gotten is that when we send them out there, they say, well, yeah, but look, they've got a cane. They're using a walker, so now they're not just elderly, they're elderly disabled. And that puts them in another category, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. And the problem is it's very difficult to walk a citizen through what's legal, what's not legal, and so forth. At the end of the day, you know, my concern is that if you've got these facilities, that the people in the facilities are treated right, the facilities are clean, and it seems to be a bounce back between whether it's a structural issue from the city's perspective versus a state-mandated standards issue, and it's difficult to send a citizen to a number in Austin to go complain about what they perceive is a health issue in a home in their neighborhood that the city can't do anything about. So what I would advocate you do is try to come up with some kind of a simple grid that would at least enable them, yes, no, decision tree. Okay, it is a group home for handicapped. Here's who's responsible. The city can do this. The city can't do that. The state needs to do this.
All the city can do on all of these code violations.
Nope.
We can give them a number at the state they can call.
I understand,
okay.
Mary, but I think having that for the citizens to be able to look at black and white would help. I've got Mick McCord. He's almost becoming a full-time group home specialist. But that's, you know, he's got to go out there. He's got to have meetings with the community. He's got to do all this. And if that's what we have to do, then in our budget, we're going to have to figure out how many of these people we need to handle the growing dots, because there's way more dots up there that need to be put on the map. And
but the state needs to take some action to facilitate our abilities to deal with this.
I fully agree, but in the meantime, I don't think it's fair that the city keep taking a hit for what's the state's responsibility. So, Joey, call Mick and get some addresses.
Well,
thanks. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Natinsky. Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question when preparing for this was complete listing. This is a complete listing, so I share Mr. Natinsky's question because it's the dot in my perspective district in Southwest. Doesn't have very many dots, but it seems like I get more conversation. And, you know, a couple of times I've been in the community, and you and I correspond in email on a couple of locations, and you guys have been very responsive, and I very much appreciate, Joey. So my issue goes back to complete listing, and I hear what you're saying, Mary, the moving target. I think another thing is we got to figure out how to communicate with citizens about where is their recourse, where are neighbors' recourse as it relates to a facility that is in perceived violation or not. No one here wants to discriminate against anyone. Period, the end. That is not the case. What we are looking about is quality of life in a neighborhood, and houses are different, occupants are different. That's okay, just as long as everyone fits into the reasonable norms of a neighborhood. So I would encourage you, Joey, and Forrest behind me, and Mary to the right, is to make sure our code compliance officers that respond to issues that come from citizens are sufficiently armed with information to say what the city can and cannot do. Because that's something that's very hard as a councilman to respond when they say, well, why aren't you doing something about this? And by the time it gets to a councilman, it's burning anger, and they feel like disruption. They feel like the city's not doing the job for them and those things. And then we respond, and it's just, you know, kerosene on the fire. So whatever the manager can do within code compliance when you respond to these to give sufficient information about the boundaries, about what the city can do or not, and I don't know, Mary, if that means a pamphlet or something similar to what Ron was talking about, but something that communicates the expectations. I mean, I've said for a long time, part of our job is setting expectations of what we can and cannot do. So that's where I would go on this. I understand it's a moving target. It's becoming a growing concern, and I agree with Mr. Natinsky, the dots. I just, for some reason, I feel that I have more dots in the Southwest area. I'm trying to look at the line between Ms. Hasso and I, because she does have some challenges there in her respective district. But, all right, thank you, Mayor.
All right, thank you. And before we get to Ms. Davis, you know, let me just kind of chime in, as I did, to say that on one street, I have one that's across the street, and the same owner opened up another one across the street from that one, and it's like a business, and it is unfair, and we do have to make sure that we begin to make sure the state understands that we're taking care of some things that they ought to be playing a part in regulating. I also said that when I have my meeting with the governor, Governor Perry, we'll put this on the list as well as a major concern, but we're going to have to figure out some way to bring some type of city regulation to some degree. Whether or not we're regulating the actual group home or we are dealing with responsibilities to the owner of the property. Maybe, you know, notices and fines and fees and concerns should go more direct to the owner. There are other, maybe those that are all have a handicap rep. I don't know if everyone there would be handicapped. Maybe it's something that we're going to have to try to figure out how we can get a handle on it, because we fail our citizens when they have a problem in their community and we, the city, cannot do anything about it. And we should be able to do something about any problem that's within the city of Dallas, not to be able to just have to accept something that we can't do anything about. So I think we'll keep turning over some rocks until we figure out what's happening. Ms. Davis, and then Ms. Hosso.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To the city attorney, Tom, is there any way that we can write to the state? And I agree with Mary. With us doing this pamphlet, I mean, it's not dealing with, I think, the real issue. The real issue is, can we get to the state and let them know that we have, and I know, Ms. Mayor Carraway, that you're going and you're going to let the mayor know it's a going concern. But is there anything that we can do? Can we write them now and say that the rules that they have in place is not helping communities where we have a whole lot of group homes that are becoming a problem?
Ms. Davis, give me the opportunity to speak with Mr. Castro to have some further discussions about and get his guidance on what would be, in addition to the mayor speaking with the governor, or if there are some other things that he would suggest that we do, and let me get back with you.
Yeah, because, I mean, right now it seems like we don't have a leg to stand on at this point. And I agree with Mr. Cadet, even if he came in as an SUP, I support good group homes. Let me say that. And I know this is a fair housing issue, and that's in it, because listening to all of it seems like a fair housing issue. But we also have to have something to protect us. And for those individuals who's listening, they need, where can they go to get this jury where they can find out the guidelines to group homes? So they'll call here. They'll call the city. And they think the city wrote these guidelines. And the state, this is a state issue that regulates us on group homes. And I would tell them this, and they said, no, somebody said city did it. And people don't understand that this is coming from the state. Our hands are tied.
Let me speak with Mr. Castro, and I'll report back to you, Ms. Davis.
Okay, but thank you, Tom. But Joy, Mary, is there somewhere they can go to see these guidelines for group homes?
We will attempt to put some communication together. I will tell you, while we were putting this briefing together, it took us many, many staff meetings because it is so confusing
mm-hmm.
and so contradictory almost, and, you know, one could be this and that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm feeling a bit challenged about communicating clearly on these.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the clearest communication I can say is any code violations, any premise violations, I can go take care of.
So we
the rest of it, I'm not... But we're gonna take a shot at it.
So what you said, I don't want us to do anything that's gonna hurt it. So you said really not to put it out there, just only if it's a code violation.
I'm gonna try to make some communication that clears it up. We're gonna try to develop some. The other thing I think that's really important on that communication is to give somebody a phone number to call. That way we can get a list. Again, they go in and out of business fairly often. But we're going to try to get more info on them and be sure that within the parameters of what we can do, we're doing that. So,
do you have who handles your group home? Is it just Joy?
Right, department? Code's the only way we can go at it. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Davis. Ms. Hosso.
Thank you, Mayor. And
thank you.
Well, again, we will work on some communication for the citizens. We'll also work on encouraging them to give us locations and provide one spot so they can do that. And Mr. Perkins will be talking to Mr. Castro about what options there are.
And when will we see this again?
We'll bring you the communication tool. We'll just send it to you as we develop it, and you can give us your feedback, and then we'll start using it. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jody. Good presentation.
Thank you, Jody.
All right. Madam Secretary, we're going to next item, and that'll be a briefing on redistricting. All right. So we'll go E and F. I guess we can go to both of them. Get into both of them now. Jasmine? On you.
Good afternoon. I'm Yasmin Tolliver, and I'll be providing the briefing for you today. But before I get started, I want to acknowledge our redistricting commission chair who is here today, Dr. Ruth Morgan, and she is in the audience. And,
Dr. Morgan, stand up so that if you don't mind, just so everybody can recognize Dr. Morgan. And thank you for all your service. And we had a talk, and you're doing a good job, and we're looking forward to you bringing us the redistricting solution. The perfect map. All right, we're looking for the perfect map. That's it.
She and Mr. Radcliffe have been providing great leadership for us, so
absolutely,
we're very excited about the process. And today, I'm going to provide you a briefing, and on slide two, go to the other one. That's the second briefing. Thank you. On slide two, that gives you the general overview of what this briefing includes, but I'm going to get into the nitty-gritty of what really affects us here in the city of Dallas, and that's the demographic profile of Dallas. So if you go ahead and turn to slide 10, this portion of the briefing covers the demographic census information for the city of Dallas, which is the total population, race and ethnicity in the voting age population. On slide 11, that gives a general overview of the population changes over the last decade. And as of April 1, 2010, the city of Dallas has 1,197,816 people, which was a 0.8% increase over the last 10 years. Some highlighted changes are that Dallas gained 9,236 people. We remain in the top three largest cities in Texas, right behind San Antonio and Houston. District 3 saw the largest increase in population, and District 2 saw the largest decrease in population. And to get to our ideal district size for the 2011 redistricting process, we just take that total population, the one on bullet three under population, and we divide that by 14, which gives us 85,558, which is the number we want to try to get closest to for each district. On slide 12, that covers the population number and percent change for each district, and you can see your districts there. I'm going to kind of cover who gained the most and who lost the most. And again, District 3 had the largest increase in population, gaining almost 18,000 people, which was a 22% increase. District 3, oh, okay. And that was a pretty big jump. That was 22% that they increased. District 2 had the largest decrease in population, and they lost a little over 2,000 people, which was a 12.6% loss for them. Now, if you go to slide 13, slide 13 explains how we are required to count race and ethnicity for the purposes of redistricting. To comply with the Voting Rights Act, the Department of Justice requires that all persons answering yes to the question number 8 on the 2010 census form and identifying as Hispanic are counted as Hispanic alone for the redistricting process. This results in all Hispanic census responders being counted as Hispanic regardless of their race. All race categories such as white, black, and Asian do not include anyone answering yes to number 8 on the census form. So if you look at your census form on page 14, if someone answers yes to number 8, they still can go into number 9 and say, I am Hispanic, but I'm also white or I'm also black. If they answer yes to number 8, they are counted as Hispanic, period. If they answer, I am Hispanic and white, they are still counted as Hispanic. They are counted in the minority. Slide 15. Again, in order to determine the various minority populations for the purposes of redistricting, we follow the Department of Justice and OMB guidelines. And this slide gives you an idea of how those numbers break down. So, for example, the 2010 census data reports that 607,415 people selected white on the 2010 form. Of those 607,000, 262,210 people also selected white. Hispanic. Those who also selected Hispanic have to be counted in the Hispanic population, leaving 345,205 people to be counted as white. So turn to slide 16, and you will see an overview of the race and ethnicity totals for the city. Now, the Hispanic population increased by more than 84,000 people, and they now make up 42% of our city's population. The black population decreased by more than 5,000 people, and now that makes up about a quarter of the city's population. And the white population decreased by over 65,000 and now makes up 29% of the city's population. Slides 17 through 20 break those populations down by district, and we'll start with slide number 17, which is the Hispanic population. Again, I'm going to kind of just go over who had the most increase and who had the least. District 2 had the largest number and percent decrease for the Hispanic population over the last 10 years. The largest number increase occurred in Districts 8 and 3, while the largest percent increase happened in District 12. And District 12 increased by 113%. Slide number 18 reports the black population per district. And the black population had the largest number decrease in districts 4 and 7. They both lost over 8,000 people in the black population. The largest percent decrease was in District 13, and they lost about 45% of their population. The largest number increase and percent increase again happened in District 12, and that was a 147% increase. Slide 19 reports the white population, and the largest number of the white population increased in District 14 by almost 10,000 people. The largest number lost was in Far North Dallas, and they lost a little over 12,000 people. And the largest percent increase of the white population was in District 2 with 24%, while the largest percent decrease was in District 5, and they lost about 48%. Slide number 21 reports our voting age population. And the voting age population includes everyone who is over the age of 18. Approximately 70% of our city lands in this category, and the largest voting age population remains in District 14. That's where it was, that's who had the largest population in, that was the largest population from 2000 to 2010. District 3 had an explosive growth of its voting age population, resulting in the largest number and percent increase in voting age population. Okay, so now we'll move on into redistricting. So if you turn to slide number 24, I'll give you a brief overview of our redistricting process and purpose. Each decennial census is expected to show changes in population totals. Boundary adjustments will be necessary to reflect these changes and to ensure equal representation. So the purpose of redistricting is to revise or replace existing districts to equalize the population in those districts. Slide number 25. Much of the redistricting process is guided by the Voting Rights Act. And the Voting Rights Act was enacted to ensure that no person is denied the right to vote because of race, color, or language. The Voting Rights Act makes voting prerequisites and requirements such as poll taxes or a literacy test, they make that illegal. So we can't charge a person a tax to come and vote. And the Voting Rights Act also requires that pre-clearance from the U.S. District Court or the Department of Justice be obtained in areas with a history of voting-related discrimination. And those areas are referred to as covered jurisdictions. Slide number 26. Redistricting pre-clearance requires covered jurisdictions to obtain pre-approval for any changes to voting standards, practices, or procedures before they become legally effective. Texas was added to the Voting Rights Act in 1973 when they added language minorities. Preclearance can also be obtained in the U.S. State District Court, or in our case, by submitting a plan to the Department of Justice. That's the route we're going. So on slide 28, we'll talk a little bit about the Redistricting Commission. And of course, our charter requires that the City of Dallas utilize the Redistricting Commission to complete the decennial redistricting. In January, you all made your appointment, and the chair was appointed by then-Mayor Tom Lippert. The complete list of the commissioners can be found on slide 29, but we're going to move ahead to slide 30. Also required by our charter, the commission will hold meetings and public hearings to develop proposed plans reflecting the new boundaries for all 14 districts. Once that work has been completed, they will deliver that plan to the mayor, who then presents the plan to the council at their next meeting. Slide 31. Once the mayor has shared the plan with the council, a 45-day countdown begins. The council has 45 days to adopt or modify and adopt that plan, and once the plan has been adopted, it will be moved forward to the Department of Justice, where they have 60 days to either approve it or ask for an extension, and they have the right to ask us questions or send it back to us. 32. And so now we'll talk about a little bit about the redistricting project timeline. And of course, in January, you all made your appointment. In February, the commission had their first meeting on February 8th. In March through August, we will host meetings and public hearings, which I'll talk a little bit more about here in a minute. But I have listed for you on the third bullet the dates that the commission will not be meeting, so that you know that we won't be meeting then. On slide 33, in March, the commission unanimously approved their proposed redistricting guidelines, and staff held the commission retreat and software trainings, which went very well. We had a large number of our commissioners come to the training, and all of our commissioners but one came to our retreat. Beginning this month in April, the commission will continue meeting and public hearings to obtain community and resident input on district configuration will begin. In addition, on April 13th, you will be considering approval of the guidelines that the commission members and the public will use to submit proposed plans. So those guidelines will be on your agenda for consideration on April 13th. Slide 34. Breaking away from our timeline really quickly, I mentioned those proposed meetings. And on April 28th, we'll kick off our public hearings. And here is a list for you to look at. The commissioners paired up to host meetings all over the city along the service area boundaries. And because districts 5 and 8 cover so much territory, those commissioners requested that we have two meetings. One at the east end of District 5 and one more towards the west end of District 8. Alternative locations were contacted in some districts, but due to decreased service hours, closures for construction and remodeling, or in some cases, rental fees being charged, we had to kind of make those decisions with the input of the commission on the locations.
We don't do this for commission representation.
These are considered commission meetings. So all commissioners must be in attendance at all the public hearings, and they will be bringing their proposed excused absences to the commission to be voted on, and then those will be forwarded to you to approve as excused. On slide 35, there's a map just to give you an idea of how those meetings are kind of spread around the city. We also decided to have one big citywide meeting here at the Central Library, which is going to be held on a Saturday. So if someone can't make a meeting through the week because they're all held on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we hope that they can come to that that Saturday meeting, and we're working really hard to make sure that the parking is free and that we take care of them and hope that they get here to that meeting. Slide 36. We're doing everything we can to make sure we get the word out about these meetings. We want to make sure that everyone knows. We're working with the PIO office to put out some press releases. We're also in contact with newspapers including Dallas Morning News, Aldea, Dallas Chinese News, the Dallas Examiner, and Elite News to run ads for us. We will be posting the schedule on the DallasCityHall.com. We will be running ads on DCNN. And we will be posting on the Dallas Facebook page and tweeting about the upcoming meetings on Twitter, so follow us on Twitter. A message has also been put in the May and April water bills, and we know that those messages have gone out because my staff is receiving water questions because we placed a phone number there for them to call because we haven't released the dates yet. We're making sure that those dates are set in stone. So we know that those messages are going out. We will also be sending e-alerts, flyers, and messages to all HOAs, neighborhood associations, and community organizations in addition to reaching out to our city employees through Dallas Delivers and internal announcements. And to make sure that we continue to educate the public about redistricting, we have requested copies of a book called The Impact of Redistricting on Your Community, A Guide to Redistricting. We requested those, and we have received them, and they've been sent to our public libraries for people to check out. Now, back to our timeline on slide number 37. In August, the commission hopes to have their work completed, and they want to get that the redistricting plan to the mayor by the end of August. The mayor then will make sure to get that plan to the council at their next council meeting, and again, that's when that 45-day countdown starts. On slide 38, in November, October or November, depending on when you receive the plan, you will be voting to take action to either adopt or change and adopt our plan, and then that plan is moved on to the Department of Justice. And again, the Department of Justice has 60 days to review. So hopefully in January or February, at the end of that 60-day period, we will have an approved redistricting plan. In May 2013, our new districting plan will be used for those elections unless, I was going to say, we heard, since we heard this morning, unless that date is changed to November by the pending legislation. So, but we will still have that plan ready and in place just in case. On slide 40, I'll talk a little bit about our redistricting plan submission. For members of the public who wish to submit a plan, there are a few steps that they need to take to make sure that they are submitting a complete plan to us. So what is a plan? A plan is a citywide solution for redistricting all 14 council districts. And so when someone wants to submit a plan to us, they have to utilize our submission plan packet, which is, it can be found in Appendix A, I do believe, of your of the briefing. To be considered by the Redistricting Commission as a submitted plan, the submission must include all 14 districts. We can't take a plan that only has two or three districts drawn and consider that as a plan. Partial plans, those not addressing all 14 districts, will be treated as testimony and entered into the record, so the commission will still hear that information.
Yes. Let me just stop you for just 1 second.
Okay.
So you can keep your flow going, flow right on into your guidelines.
Okay.
And so just keep moving.
Okay. You want me to go to guidelines?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, just when you
get through, I see. I got you.
Keep flowing.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. There is a plan submission packet, which can be found in Appendix A, and I'm just going to read these directly to you on slide number 41. This is what we're looking for when someone submits a plan to us. We need a statement that the submitter of the plan has consulted the approved guidelines. We need a written description of how the submitted plan complies with those guidelines. We need a statistical table showing council district population totals, population deviation by district, and any other relevant demographic information. We must have their name, address, and telephone number. And last night at our redistricting commission meeting, they did ask that we add council district. We need any attestation of support for the proposed plan, and then we need the plan submitter to sign and date the plan. And when we receive those into our office, or we will receive them at the commission meetings, we will date stamp those, make sure that they meet the guidelines, and then pass them on to the commission. On slide 42, I'll talk a little bit about how the public and the commission will be drawing those maps. And option one is a public web-based application, and it will be developed by our GIS staff, and the anticipated release date will be June 1st. The public and anyone who wants to draw the map, a map, will be able to use a web application, draw their map, and submit it to us online, so they won't have to come here to City Hall. Option two is our City Hall Redistricting Computer Lab, which we lovingly refer to as the lab. The lab has 5 desktops set up with the ArcGIS software. The commissioners and the public are welcome to come in by appointment and work on maps there. The staff is there at all times. We check them in. We set them up on the computer, they work, and then we log them off of the computer. The third option is for commissioners only. We have provided them with software to download on their laptops so that they can work on maps at home. So about 7 of them already have gotten licenses and have the software on their laptops. And so now I'll move directly into the guidelines. And as I do that, I'll continue my flow, but as I do that, we saw our vice chair of the commission come in, Mr. Ratcliffe, so he is here now with us to answer questions as well. If you turn to slide 2 on the redistricting guidelines, the guidelines, again, as I mentioned, were unanimously approved by the redistricting commission at their March 8th meeting. The guidelines have been placed on the April 13th City Council agenda for consideration and adoption. And once those are approved, those are the guidelines that all of the public and the commission will use to draw their maps. Now, the commission they came up with a preamble to kind of start their guidelines, and it's written here on page 13. The Redistricting Commission intends to apply the following guidelines as consistently as possible and to the greatest extent as possible in the drawing of the City Council district boundaries that are in the best interest of the residents and the City of Dallas. The Redistricting Commission acknowledges, however, that on some occasions these redistricting guidelines may conflict with one another. On slide four, this talks a little bit about the setup of the guidelines. They're broken down into two categories. Section A consists of items required by law, including the U.S. Constitution and the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which are population equality, minority representation, and contiguity and compactness. Section B consists of items the commission members felt were important enough to consider, and they added those in. Slide five. The first one is population equality. The total population is determined by the 2010 census data, determines that ideal size, which we talked about was 85,558. Each district should be as close in population as possible and not to exceed a 10% deviation between the population of the smallest and the largest district. Slide six. When developing maps, no district can be created or changed for the sole purpose of diluting racial, ethnic, or language minorities or packing them all into one district. And this is the second, this is minority representation. However, race and ethnicity and language minority consideration cannot be the predominant factor in the redistricting process. Slide seven. Contiguity and compactness. The district should be geographically compact and composed of contiguous territory, means all of the territory has to be connected. It can't be split up. And slide eight. Other factors that they're going to consider in the guidelines, those falling in Section B, when considering the configuration of districts, the commission will be neutral when it comes to incumbents. The districts will not be drawn for the purpose of either protecting or defeating an incumbent. Districts should also attempt to preserve communities of interest and avoid splitting neighborhoods. Much of the public testimony we received in 2001 came from community groups who did not want to be split or they didn't want to be put in a certain district. They just came out and said, we want to maintain the core of our neighborhood. So attached in Appendix A is a copy of those guidelines that were unanimously approved, and we also have our attorney on hand, Barbara Mackinich, to answer any questions about the guidelines. So,
you do?
I'm done.
All right, good.
Thank you, and let me get ready to get started. Let me go back to just a couple of things that you said.
Okay.
This is one of the most important thing, I think, that we can be dealing with on behalf of our citizens, okay? And redistricting only comes every 10 years and it affects everyone in the city of Dallas. With that, what I would like, and I've had a conversation with Mary, and so you're just hearing some of this the first time. I would like for us to be able to have these redistricting meetings televised for transparency and for all the citizens. There's a cost associated with it, but now we're looking at how that may can take place with DCNN. And so I want the citizens to know that it's going to be an open and transparent process. It's one that all citizens should be able to participate with. It only happens every 10 years. And this is one that we need to make sure that the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, citizens need to participate. And by them being televised, maybe it may generate some more excitement for us and bring us some more ideas. So that is going to take place, and it will take place in conjunction with a schedule that is not planned yet, but we will trying to see when and where, and so the citizens can look forward to knowing that they will have a chance to sit in their own homes and participate with this process. So Dr. Morgan and Mr. Radcliffe know that we're working that through, and to this council, know that that is something that, that I feel that should take place, and we're saying that it will happen. See your hand up. Let's let them decide as to how and the procedures of how it should take place. But it certainly is something that is definitely going to take place. I'm anticipating each meeting, but then let's go and see how they can best facilitate it, because there are some other technical things that has to be worked out, okay? Is that fair to say, Mayor? Okay. So with that, just wanted to add that in. Ms. Davis, you're going first. Any others? Identify yourself so I can know. Ms. Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of things. On the page where you talked about breakdowns of 4 and 7 on loss, I think that's page 18. And let me say this for the record. In District 7, we lost, as you know, DHA, page 18. Okay, on for District 7, DHA was those units that had over about 6,000 people at one time was demolished and redeveloped. So we lost about 3,000 people because of DHA. Then Turner Core, I have Rose. Ms. Caraway has Turner. Rose and Turner was demolished as well. And in Rose Terrace, we had about a good 3,000 people. So you add that up, those are 6,000 people. And then we had some demolition that's taking place in District 7. But people are moving back. So in the next 10 years, and then hopefully we'll have more people in that district. So that makes up my 6,000 people. And the 287, we've demolished with the city attorney about 200, and we've demolished about 200 homes in District 7 proper. And that's the South Dallas Fair Park. So that is my number there. So I want to put that on the record. Now, there are some places, Mary, that did not get, no one came to their door in South Dallas, especially South Dallas proper in those hard-to-reach areas. I got some calls, and one lady still has her ballot that she didn't even know how to fill out. And so we got some apartments. No one came to those apartments at all. So that's here or there. Now let me ask this question. On your minority representation, you talk about, and it's page, and I think it was page number 6. It says commissioners can draw districts where the minority has a fair chance to win where certain factors are present.
We're going to have to change presentations again in a minute, so this page changes a little slow.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Page 6 from the other presentation, guys.
It's on the.
Is that it?
No, it's way back in the back. That's it.
Okay.
Commissioners can draw districts where the minority has a fair chance to win, where certain factors are present, and like what I just mentioned, would that be considered a certain factor?
No, ma'am. The factors are from a Supreme Court case called the Jingles factors.
Can you help me with that, then?
And they are that. Okay. The minority has to be sufficiently large and geographically compact to equal a majority in the district.
Okay.
It has to be politically cohesive, and it has to have been subject to block voting by a white group that prevented it from electing its representative.
Oh, no, I'm looking it up. I want to look it up, and you're right. Why would that go there then if it's that? Because I'm looking at it now. I pulled it up.
It's in the actual guidelines themselves. When we were doing the presentation, we didn't make it as long as the guidelines. But if you look at guidelines minority representation number two under that's on the beginning of the second page. It has
I understand what you're saying.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
If somebody was reading that like I was, that can be misleading. You see what I'm saying? Because the guideline is really for something else that happened. And I pulled up some things that she just mentioned, and I found it. I just happened to find it. But if someone was to read that, that is misleading, that they're in a community, they have a fair chance of winning certain things that are presented under certain factors.
If the three jingles factors are present, then the courts will find that they had an opportunity to win, and that they need to be given consideration in drawing a district.
How would an individual resident know that? If these are televised, and if somebody is and this is on our website, on our web page right now, and you pull this up and you read that, how would they know that?
The guidelines themselves, when they're approved by the council, hopefully next week, are going to be posted with the public submission. And the guidelines themselves on the second page have the three jingles requirements.
That's
the guidelines themselves are very full and complete. And when they were doing the the briefing, they tried to make it shorter. So I'm sorry if there was some confusion by trying to shorten that one.
Okay. The other one is the meetings. Yasmin. And I have spoken to my commissioner for this seat. I would like to also have one at the, because I have a large land as well in District 7. Got the 4 East, and then we got Oak Cliff as well. I know the 4 and 7 will be having a meeting together, and I will be attending that and try to get out as many people as possible. But I think I need to have one either downtown or at the Martin Luther King Center, and really would like the Martin Luther King to pick up those people try to get those people in the South and Oak Cliff.
Now we are having that one at the Central Library.
I would like to have, do I need to get with my commissioner to ask for another one at the Martin Luther King Center? Okay, then. That's what I'll do. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. You done? All right. Any other questions? Yeah, good job.
Thank you.
All right. Madam Secretary?
Thank you. We begin your afternoon speakers with Charles Good, followed by Mariana Griggs. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the symbols of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 10 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. You may address your comments to Mayor Carraway.
Yes.
Again, your speaker, Charles Good. Not present. Mariana Griggs. Not present. Steve L. Mathis. Not present. Cedric Hager. Not present. Ernest Mason. Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
Okay, my name is Ernest Mason. My address is 1839 Sutherland Avenue, Dallas, Texas, 75203.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Okay. All right. Good afternoon, Council, and definitely good afternoon, Mayor. Sometimes God connects you with great people to accomplish great tasks. And one of the greatest tasks that we could accomplish is reaching our young people. And I say that because late last year I had the opportunity to connect with Mayor Carraway at one of his town hall meetings. And while we were there, he invited us to work with his Dallas Youth Council. At the time, my daughter's cousin had just killed herself. And I had to ask myself, why are young people killing themselves? They're not just committing suicide, but they're killing themselves. And it doesn't just affect us, it affects everybody, because they could kill one of our loved ones, one of our relatives. And then we have such a reactive mentality sometimes. Oh, a kid got bullied, let's do something about it. Oh, a kid got killed, let's do something about it. But once it blows over, it's kind of like it's on to the next issue. And so I wanted to applaud Mayor Carraway, because in a time where people look for temporary solutions, he's shown commitment to a permanent solution by establishing the Dallas Youth Council facility in Oak Cliff, a place where young people can come and be a part of something, and we're looking to really furnish that. And I just want to say I appreciate the opportunity, because I don't think a lot of people really give our political leaders credit for standing up for young people. And so with that being said, I've been working to promote the Dallas Youth Council at schools, at colleges. I've gone to guest speak, and I see the excitement in the faces of the young people I speak to when they realize that they can actually have a voice. They can actually be heard. And so establishing a council like that just shows the commitment to Mayor Carraway to actually give young people a voice and to create opportunities for them. Because when they have more opportunities, and when they have a greater voice, they're less likely to go out there and harm themselves or harm us. So it only makes sense to promote something as positive as the Dallas Youth Council. And so I say that because as budget cuts happen, and as the budget decreases, then the need to coordinate and collaborate increases. Why? Because we'll have to share resources, we'll have to pool our minds, we'll have to creatively figure out ways to reach these young people. And so with that being said, I'm working with political leaders, I'm working with radio stations right now, I'm working with community colleges. So from political leaders to educational leaders to entertainment leaders, we've got to find ways to reach these people and do something positive in our community. So I just would like to say that I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve with the Dallas Youth Council and to work with the mayor, because I stay in his community. He's a neighbor of mine, and a lot of people just don't really understand the good things that he's doing. And I'm not just saying that because he's my neighbor. I'm saying that because I really do appreciate what he does, and I just appreciate you guys for giving me the opportunity to express and voice myself, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. You need to start over and speak again?
I think I'm good.
You're good. All right. Now take care. Thank you.
Your next speaker is Tamara Washington.
My name is Tamara Washington, and my boarding home address is 902 Garza Avenue. I'm here today to talk about, I had talked about foreclosure, illegal foreclosure on my property a while back, and basically it's been in the court. I call it an error. Pro se cases are exempt from a magistrate judge. However, my case was assigned to a magistrate judge, and when I wrote a letter to the U.S. District Court, Fifth Circuit Appeals Court, my case was switched to another judge who dismissed it, and I wrote to the appeals court and I told them this is not right, because it says in the rules of civil procedure that these pro se cases are not to be assigned, and I never got an answer, just the upholding of the dismissal. And then I went online to look at my case, and they had canceled, they had closed the case, and hadn't even heard from the appeals court, because their closing of the case was dated a certain date, and the appeals court, their answer to me was on a certain date, and it was after the appeals court canceled their letter to me didn't match up was after they closed the case, if that makes sense. Anyway, basically they closed the case without hearing from the appeals court. And I just don't trust them. And when I go up there, there's a lot of white people, and I just don't trust them. That's trying to take my house. Right now, my children and my husband are in the house. And so basically that's the situation. And I also I wrote another letter to of complaint about them closing the case before they heard from the Fifth Circuit Appeals Court in New Orleans. So I'm waiting to hear on that. Basically, the tree planting that I heard about earlier today, it may be planting some shrubs. The shrubs might be a little less expensive, so you won't have to take so much from the schools. You know, maybe a tree costs, this is just a guesstimate, $100, and shrubs cost $50. So maybe, you know, doing both of those would kind of help, you know. I have this idea about maybe the Dallas Flower Garden, or out of the name Arboretum, maybe they could do like shrubs with a maze in it, and you walk through, just something for the family. You walk through the shrubs, just like, you know, like the mazes on that you write with, but do one out of shrubs and put that in the Dallas Arboretum. And I'll be back next week. Thank you for your time, Council.
Mr. Atkins, the response?
Yes, response, Council, would you speak to that?
Okay, thank you. Madam Secretary?
Your next speaker is Cedric Steele. Not present. Brandon P. Reed. Not present. Sandra Crenshaw. Not present. Ozumba Lunk. Not present. Frank Ward. Mr. Ward will be followed by Trina Trish.
Glory to God. Good afternoon to the mayor and the council. Why are y'all so fearful? Over the break, my subject matter changed several times. Started out with, I have something to tell you. Prove me now. I dare you. And my last subject matter is justice and recompense. Money, land, houses, and buildings. Why are y'all so fearful? I've been coming down here all this time. I've already stated my case. It's already been proven then truth to what I'm saying. But I yet to really get an opportunity to present it. About a week, next week will be 2 years that I received a letter from you, Mayor, where you invited some of the speakers us that had issues and meeted with us. And a couple of weeks after that, it will be 2 years that I wrote my council person, Ms. Davis, a letter requesting to meet with her to go over some information. 2 years, I never had a meeting with my council person. I come down here, and I know not to take any disrespect to you, but I know someone encouraged them to come down and speak, and, you know, other people come down and, you know, say foolish things and look foolish and do foolish, and you all try to put me right in there in the basket with that. But, you know, go look at my community in North Oak Cliff in the bottom, that this $41 million development project was proposed to the city. The city rejected twice and then approved it the third time for $16,925,000. And this is before you even heard of a CHOTO. The CHOTO, the City Housing Development Organization, come out of my project. Before you even did Quality of Life and Good Life, they came out of my project. Brian Potasnik, before he started building those apartments, came out of my project. The young lady came to me and told me that he was interested in doing my project. My name was supposed to be on it. I was supposed to have been compensated for it, never was. Just like Mr. Lawson, that worked for the city, had my project, came to get my consent, and I didn't give it to him in writing, took it and did it anyway.
and I keep coming down here. But go visit my community. Go visit my family, my relatives, and see what you all are doing. You on one hand, you want to do something good, but you're destroying lives, mine in particular. You know, you can't do this in a 15-minute drive-by meeting. I mean, it's true. Let me tell you something. This project is designed to be self-sufficient, to generate revenue, and to keep doing. It was a seed project. And not only that, you wouldn't be in the shape that you're in today.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Thank you.
Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Your next speaker, Trina Trish. Trina Trish will be followed by Janie Messinger. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon to everyone. First of all, let me say that I should have been first on the list according to your rules. I will not discuss that because today I'm not going to be about me. I'm going to be about others. Nevertheless, these are my credentials as not only a street sign vendor. I am also a contributing writer. That gives me a press thing because I do write press. I have an article in the paper, an opinion piece, that is healthcare reform for free. I also put that in my free newsletter that I distribute, that I give you all. And therefore, they denied me access, which is discriminatory, and allowed other press people in. But again, it's not going to be about me today. It's going to be about healthcare reform. It's going to be about the people. When I stepped in this, Jahe, so if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, was talking about group homes and the mentally challenged. People who lose a home are not mentally challenged. You do not put all those people that are in shelters as mentally challenged. As a matter of fact, I taught school, teach school, and I'm a teacher. That's why I operate Trinity Church Teaching Ministries. What you call a thing matters. If you would call a shelter, people would look at it as a shelter. When you call it homeless, people look at it as home. That's why they try to establish relationships and they stay there. You need to watch what you say. Mentally ill, number one. If you would read up on some of the newsletters I wrote, that's really not correct. It is a chemical imbalance in the brain. Dr. Eric Braverman, who has the 21st century cutting medical facility, PATH facility, will tell you that there are imbalances in the brain, and what needs to be done is those imbalances need to be balanced. That's called health and nutrition. Doctors will also say that you get new brain cells every so many days. Therefore, if somebody calls you dumb, tell them, check me out in 30 days, I'll eat myself smarter. The book review that I'm doing soon states that you lose 10 points of your IQ by email and also by cell phone interruptions. So while some people are getting dumber, you can eat your way smarter. How about that? And yet you try to put people in a block based on your own. There are five accesses that you are required to fulfill in order to call someone mentally challenged. Doctors do not utilize that, yet they give you a pill that they know don't work. It has been documented that exercise takes care of depression. Antidepressant pills don't. Why don't they write a prescription for Gold's Gym? Why don't they write a prescription to take Tai Chi, since they cure their stress-related diseases through meditation and yoga? That's healthcare reform for free. Sleeping is free. You don't have to take a pill for that. Again, there are foods you can eat. There are things you can do. Vitamin D, you get that from the sun. Grapeseed extract, why buy the pill when you can eat the grape? But they do not write the prescription for those things that will help poor people become empowered and able to take care of themselves. They want to keep you dependent on the government that refused to take care of them.
Thank you, Ms. Trish. Ms. Trish, make sure I get a couple of your pamphlets before you go, please, if I could.
I did give you.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Janie Metzinger.
Good afternoon. Members of the council, can you hear me?
Turn it up, the volume up. Now, let's see. No, it just went down.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I'm Janie Metzinger. I'm the Public Policy Director for Mental Health America of Greater Dallas. Our address is 624 North Good Latimer, Dallas, Texas 75204. I just wanted to let you all know that I worked on, have been working on boarding home reform since 2006, and I'm very glad that you all had the briefing today. I also worked on the interim state study to advocate for the interim state study and then on the interim state study that was the basis for House Bill 216. Worked with the legislature last year to pass House Bill 216 and have also worked on the model state standards that were required to be written by House Bill 216. So I believe that Mental Health America can be of great benefit and assistance to the city as you work through this issue, and just wanted especially clarifying there were some things that I think were misunderstandings today that I think we would be helpful in clarifying. I think it would be, frankly, there are some fairly simple things that the city can do to implement boarding home reform and maybe even clarify some of those categories that you have multitudes of, that I think several of those things might actually fit into the definition of boarding home that's contained in House Bill 216. And so I would certainly recommend that we look at that and would be glad to be helpful to you.
Thank you, Ms. Mazur. And I'd be pleased to get some of those information so we can run it through the make sure that we have all I's dotted and T's crossed.
I'll be happy to meet with you and would especially appreciate meeting with you before you meet with the governor.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank
okay.
You.
Madam Secretary?
Thank you. Your next speaker is Gwen Wooten. Not present. Your final speaker this afternoon is Leslie Allen Davis.
Leslie Allen Davis, 3035 East Leadville, Apartment 401. Phone number 214-376-3811. We have a major issue. We have major important issues happening right before our eyes. Right now in the Middle East, I'm getting my information from the Pat Robinson of the 700 Club and John Hagee, Minister in I think San Antonio, Texas. Israel is being surrounded by Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, and possibly off the Mediterranean Sea. Well, I learned from the 700 Club what I got from them was that the special spies of the Israelis sitting in Lebanon, they found anywhere from 100 to 400 missile batteries trained on Israel right now as we speak. War is imminent for Israel. And the Gaza Strip has been rearmed, and the West Bank has been rearmed. And so within the next 12 to 18 months, Israel could be at war. But those missiles can reach it from those three locations, plus from Egypt, probably from Egypt too. Not missile, but weapons of destruction can reach any spot in Israel right today, any landmark in Israel right today. So I say that the utmost important that we go see about calling your congressman, calling Barack Obama, your legislature, people to help, see they have money that can help Israel fight this war. Because they're in a losing situation. They may have to have a preemptive strike on Lebanon. Because they have, the thing about these missiles is that they have guided missiles now. Guided, they can have a range, hit within 500 yards of their target. And all over Israel. Another thing, Mexico is here. We need to speak Spanish. Everybody needs to speak Spanish. For the numbers of the students just came, so they got more of them here than we are. Then they speak English. We need to try to speak Spanish anyway, because what they say. And, let's see. Songs I want to hear on the radio. I can call 94.5. Tell them I want to hear Baby Hold On by Gerald LaVert. And play Whitney Houston, and I'll Always Love You. And play Anita Baker, I Don't Know What Good Love Feels Like. Those are inspirational. So they build you up, make you want to get close, get back with your husband, get back to your wife. It makes you do anything. And you can play us in two ways, confession. And I feel like I got 58 seconds. Let me run it on down. God bless you. Pray for me. Pray for America. Pray for our president. Pray for the city council. I want y'all to give your best. I'm going to try to give my best. I think my time to find me a job too, but I won't be out on Wednesday. Thank you, I'll see you out. I'm feeling like I got the 42 seconds. And see what else. Let's see. 214-376-3811. call me anytime if you have any kind of problem. I'm trying to see how to solve these problems.
You want me to give you the request line number for 945?
214?
No,
I mean,
you want me to give you the request line?
I know the number, too. I call me every night.
Oh.
And my favorite song is, with you and I, Baby Don't Love Me by Gerald LaVert. You call in, I want y'all to call in, folks, so they won't play it. What's her name? Erykah Badu Honey. Play Erykah Badu Honey and play, If You Think You're Lonely Now, and play, I'm through for tonight.
Yep, all right. You're wrapped up now. It is April the 6th, and it is exactly 4:28. This meeting is now adjourned.